Chairs there? Okay. So I'm going to turn it over to Vice Mayor Sean Morgan, who's going to introduce you to the venue and to Chico.
All right. Welcome, Northern California. I'm Sean Morgan, Vice Mayor of the City of Chico, and I am a water user. I'd like to thank you all for coming to this California Water Commission public meeting. California, as you all know, is in its fourth year of drought. No one knows when this is going to end. The governor has put together a mandatory 25% reduction in water use. The federal government has cut our water allocation to zero. Most of you are aware the California Water Commission is tasked with allocating $2.7 billion of Proposition 1 water storage funds. The commission is here tonight to educate us on the water storage investment program and their role in it. Just as importantly, they're here to get your thoughts and inputs as to how that money should be spent. This month, Chico is one of only three locations outside of Sacramento the commission is holding public forums like this one. So tonight we have a unique opportunity as North Valley residents, property, and business owners to understand the water program and to ensure our voices are heard. Water is the lifeblood of the North Valley, and if we want to ensure another drought can't cripple our economy, we need to be engaged and passionate in these discussions. I'd like to welcome and thank all the elected officials that came tonight who obviously see how important this is. We don't have time to recognize them all, but if they would stand up, if you are an elected official in Northern California, please stand up and show your commitment to the North Valley and the water that we all use. Thank you all so much for coming. And I'd sincerely like to thank the commission on behalf of all of us in the City of Chico for coming and listening to us talk about this very valuable resource. Thank you all for being here.
Now we have a chance to hear from Commissioner Curtin, who's going to then introduce the rest of the welcomers tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. And those of you who know me, which might be a few, you'll recognize that hearing from me is usually a very long process, but we're going to keep it real short tonight. Thank you all so much for coming out. I think we made the absolute right decision having our first meeting here in Chico. This is clearly ground zero. This turnout does not happen by accident. This is the most important issue that we can be confronting today, and we have a very difficult task ahead of us as the commission. 2 years ago, we were a kind of a sleepy little backwater that nobody recognized. Then the bond passed, and all of a sudden, here we are. Unfortunately, for the first few years, the water was pretty good, but we've watched like a slow-motion train wreck while this drought just began to eat the heart out of particularly agricultural California. Finally, after 4 years of drought and now extremely and severe drought in most parts of the state, urban water users, suburban water users are beginning to understand this is serious. Something that you've known and the Central Valley has known for years, how dangerous and how serious this is. The state has finally gotten it. The governor has made some important steps, and this is the beginning of an important process. You're going to hear a lot about what we have to do. This is a two-way process tonight, and I know it may be a little frustrating, but we have some very, very clear statutory guidelines, and this is not passed just by the legislature. The voters of California passed the statutory guidelines that we have to work with and through to make the decisions that we're going to have to make. I also feel that $2.7 billion is a lot of money, but when compared to the need for storage in California, it's really not as big as it sounds, and there's going to have to be a lot of working together to sort this out. We want to hear from you, but first you have to hear from us for a few minutes about how we need to make, what we need to know, and how we have to operate to make our decisions. And then hearing from you is critical, and I'm so glad we came up here, myself and Armando will introduce in a second. This is a fantastic turnout. You people know about water. You got a lot to teach us, and we got a lot to learn. So before we get rolling, I want to introduce the other commissioner, Armando Quintero, who'll just say hello in a few words. Thank you.
Thanks, Denny. It really is a pleasure to be here, and I want you all to know that right after the bond passed, at the first commission meeting, we all looked at each other and immediately said, we have to get out of Sacramento. We have to get out into California, hear what people are saying, hear what they want to do, and really from the get-go, the commission is committed to listening to Californians about how we work with this bond and with you. And we're really looking forward to doing the best job possible for you and for California.
Thank you, Armando. I have the pleasure to introduce your first speaker, who will be, I'm quite sure, brief, but very, very important. And I have to tell you, it's a relationship that we've been involved in for about 30 years now, mostly political, but somewhat on a friendly basis. We don't always agree, but I can tell you there's never been a disagreeable moment. And I must say that the reason we are here tonight, the first meeting outside of Sacramento, really the first meeting to talk about this water bond in a large-scale public arena, is because of the person I'm going to introduce. He and among others who've represented you up here has been a real champion. Again, pressing a very, very clear agenda without being disagreeable in any way, shape, or form, but never letting you off the hook in any way, shape, or form. So the reason we're here tonight, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce somebody I've known for a long time, I believe is the dean of the area, politically speaking, but also one of the most, I don't know exactly the right way to say this, Sacramento be not as good a place without the next speaker. And I'm so pleased to have known him over the course of his career and watch the way he operates. But I want to bring up Senator Jim Nielsen. He is the finest gentleman and one of the most knowledgeable and effective legislators you will ever have up here. And I feel blessed to have been know him as well as I do, and I look forward to working with him. I can only tell you this, of all your advocates, you have one really, really fine advocate here.
Thank you, Danny. Danny and Commissioner Quintero, thank you so very much for coming up here. Assemblyman Gallagher and I knew that there was a pent-up frustration of all of us up here to have our voices heard. We've tried to be those voices, but now we have a historic opportunity. Ladies and gentlemen, as I often do and did again tonight, come from Sacramento, I drive up above by the Forbay. And I realize that nothing in water storage has happened since 1964 in Oroville here. And it's high time now. Tonight, you're going to have your opportunity to express yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for turning out in such force. And the commission means business. You know, when I sat down here, you notice I had my coat and tie on and everything, and the commissioners took their coats off. And I said, you know, these guys are here to stay. So I'm going to be here today, too, until I took my coat off. And I took another step and rolled my sleeves up. But that's the point. You will be heard tonight, ladies and gentlemen, and they have assured me that every voice that wishes to be heard will have that opportunity. If it goes too long tonight and we don't have that opportunity, and we want to be graceful because they do have to go back to Sacramento, but they promised me they'd come up again. So that's a wonderful commitment and an outreach to the North State by this wonderful commission. They have a historic burden, too, a lot of competing interest, ladies and gentlemen. And I want to make something very clear to you, as you've heard me say it ever so often, as I was a part of the negotiations on this bond and the one in 09 as well, that the state of California most of the time does not keep its promise to the citizens. This bond was clearly represented to be about water storage. The governor's own ballot argument says so. In the budget committee a few weeks ago, which I'm the vice chairman of, the Secretary of Resources, in response to my question about this 2.75 dedicated to surface storage, on two occasions he used one word as response: absolutely. Now we have to work together, though. This is about, and the burden on the commission is, beneficial use. We must demonstrate how beneficial use would be for sites in Temperance Flat. Now, Temperance Flat, that's the job of the folks down there. But both are related to storage, and both are important. And as you've ever often heard me say, we cannot conserve our future in either energy or water and have a future for our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. And by the way, this is not about us. This is about them. and their future. So we have this opportunity, but we must demonstrate that for here, Sites Reservoir is a beneficial use. That water can be used for recharge. It can be transferred for recharge. That water can take the pressure off of Folsom Lake and 400,000 residents all the way down to Sacramento. That water can help ensure that the demands on our water up here that we look to, and those water rights that are historic, and by the way, that water bond has the area of origin language in it, remember that. But we're not going to have that unchallenged unless we do have storage, and unless we demonstrate there are many uses, including environmental use for that water. Sites has been studied for near 50 years. There will be some more studies, but we need it. We have an opportunity to communicate with the commission tonight. And I can't thank the commissioners enough for the time. You know, they don't get paid a lot. This is really an act of love. But it is also for them and for all of us a historic act, and one that we've got to be in for the long haul. Commissioners, I thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator. There's nothing that I can think of that would be more important to be doing right now for myself, but I do want to say one thing.
Whoops. One more thing, I take advantage of the podium for this, because, folks,
problem.
I want to ask you most humbly, in your remarks, please be brief and be respectful of the time of the commissioners. Understanding, if we get way too late and we need to break up, there'll be another occasion that they'll come up here. So you will have your moment in the sun. And there's no need to whooping and hollering and cheering people on. They're just here listening. This isn't a confrontation or nothing combative about it. So let's keep the lid on things. Let's be good communicators. And let's talk fast like auctioneers.
Or like me. I have to say, I got a lot of respect for Senator Nielsen. But, you know, he just added $5 million to the surface storage portion of the bond. And that's pretty standard operating procedure. We walked up here with 2.7, now we got 2.75. So I don't know how that'll hold up in the courts, but it's a good start. Thank you very much. Next, I want to introduce Assemblyman Jim Gallagher, a little newer on the scene than Senator Nielsen, but I can tell you with the same passion, the same commitment, and the same focus about, okay, what's this all about? We're going to get our share of this piece, and it has to be done right. So I am very honored to introduce him. I've met him a few times, had a few interesting conversations, and I'm looking forward to more. By the way, this is not the only opportunity for you to weigh in. We will come back if needed, and it looks like it might be needed, but you will have representatives on our stakeholder committee, on all of our meetings. There are agencies here, there are electeds who come. It's not going to be the last voice, not the last time people get to speak about this. I can, trust me, this is a year and a half process that we have to go through. So, Assemblyman.
Well, I just want to thank everyone for coming out here tonight. And I am truly heartened to see so many faces and so many bodies packed into this room tonight, because it shows me that we agree about the importance, the great importance here of ensuring that we invest in our water future and that we ensure that promises are kept. And I told the commissioners that if they would come up to Northern California, they would hear the thousands of voices that are coming through my mouth when I speak down in Sacramento about the importance in investing in our water storage future. Tonight is a tremendous opportunity in the midst of this great drought. 4 years now that we've been in a drought, in the midst of everything that is tough about that, the cutbacks, the things that we've seen that have affected our day-to-day lives, we have a tremendous opportunity. We have an opportunity with the passage of this water bond, $2.7 billion, that we can ensure that these droughts aren't as drastic as they are in the future, that we can ensure that our water rights and that our water future is secure. And we have a tremendous opportunity right now to let our voices be heard. And that is a big part of why we encourage the Water Commission to come up to Northern California and hear from all of you. Because as I said, I know there's thousands of voices behind me when I go down and speak in Sacramento. I also know that we all agree there is a great consensus that we ensure that this $2.7 billion is spent on above ground water storage. It is so vital that we bring on these new storage opportunities for so many reasons. But one, because that was the promise made with the bond. That is why people voted to support the bond, because they knew that it promised new water storage in the state. Number two, it's because that's what the language of the water bond says, that this $2.7 billion is to be earmarked for water storage projects. But most importantly, it's to ensure that we have water for our future. And to just underscore that point, had we had a project like Sites Reservoir over in Colusa County, had we had that in existence in these last 2 years, which were drought years, we would have about 900,000 acre feet of water stored in Sites right now. New water that is not stored anywhere else in the system. This is water that comes below the dams that would be stored and would be available for all of our needs, for our cities, for our towns, for our farms that produce and nourish our people and the world. And so we know that we need to make that investment tonight, and I know that I'm going to hear those voices tonight and that your water commissioners are going to hear those voices tonight. And I thank you for your participation, and just thank you for all being here tonight. Let's not waste this opportunity. Let's make sure it gets done. Thank you.
Great. So there's a lot of people in this room, and I'm looking at the back of the room. It looks like we need about 56 more chairs, and we're going to do something that's a little awkward, but if there's people standing at the back who've worked all day or who are disabled or who are old, can you give them, who really can't stand, I wonder if you could give up your seat, because we're going to try and get more seats, but if you're standing and you really need a seat, there's a couple seats over here, some seats over there. Please, I don't want people standing. I mean, I know on days when I worked all day and then I have to go to a public meeting, the last thing I want to do is stand at the back of the room. So we're going to get some more seats. And if there's seats up here and there's still these two prime real estate seats, so please take a seat so you're comfortable. I don't want to make people stand and do that, you know, that Walmart dance when you have to keep getting blood going back into your feet. Okay? All right, so my name is Juliana Burkhoff, and I work for the Center for Collaborative Policy. The Center for Collaborative Policy is a department of Sacramento State University, and we help collaborative efforts like this. So what we basically do is help people get together and collaborate to make good policies. So that's what we do. We're working with the Water Commission to make sure that the process that they use to come up with the draft regulations is transparent, fair, participatory, and as efficient as it can be given the crazy timetable somebody gave them for coming up with a regulation. So let me go through what the goal of tonight is, make sure everybody's on board when public participation happens and how I'll organize that so you can get ready. So first, we'll talk a little bit about Proposition 1 in water storage. What does the legislation say? Then we'll hear about what is the program that the commission is developing, what pieces do they have already, what pieces are they developing, and sort of what the engagement opportunities that you'll have will be. Then we'll hear from a survey that the commission did to find out who is interested in water storage, where, how much do they need, when will they be ready for money, that kind of thing, so you can get a sense of sort of, what do people in California feel they need? Thank you. The he's old. No, it just looks like he's been standing all day, really. Okay, so we'll hear then what some of the what's going on in California with what some of the demands and needs are, and that'll you'll hear how many projects there are and how much money is needed. Then we'll have a time for public opportunity and comments. So what I want to do is I want to make sure that that the commission hears first about any concerns, questions, or suggestions on the water storage program. And by about 7:30, you'll know what's in the water storage program. So I want to make sure we focus on that. But I also see that there's a lot of other concerns people have about water. So we'll get to as many people as we can tonight to hear about these other concerns. But I want to make sure that you're kind of for lack of a better word, strategic. It's no use spending too much time talking about something that's not really in the commission's authority. But it might be that it is, it might be it isn't. But let's sort of focus on those questions first, because they have a big job ahead of them. So focus first on these water storage investment questions, and then others. So that's the goal for tonight. There's water over here, and we'll make sure we keep refilling that water. And at the table when you came in, there was the agenda. There was I'm going to use yours as tutorials here. There was a piece that said, who is the Water Commission and what do they do, all about them. There was a piece that gave you some more information about the other public meetings. There was the draft of the law. And let me tell you what I did, because I frankly didn't want to copy 30 pages times 100 people. So I copied the first three chapters of the bill and then chapter 8. So that's why it looks like it cuts off in the middle, because the water commissioners are only responsible for chapter 8. So I wanted to make sure you had that. The rest of the bill is on the Water Commission site if you want the other pieces that the Water Board or Fish and Wildlife or whoever else is responsible for. So this is mostly just chapter 8. Then you also have the PowerPoint presentation for tonight, and that gives you a lot of the information, as well as gives you the links to the California Water Commission website. And on the website, there's two important places for you to go. One that says all the background information they've already developed, and the agendas for the meetings as they come forward, and a place for you to make comment. So at any time over the next 3 or 4 months, if you have a comment, go to the website. Do you guys have more agendas back there, Raj? We're out of agendas. Do we have agendas in the room? That means we have more than 200 people here. So if anybody has an agenda, can you pass the agenda that way, sir? Thank you. Great. This gentleman here in the blue shirt has an agenda. Do you guys at the back have agendas? Pass it backwards, it looks like. This gentleman here in the blue shirt has an extra. Maybe pass it over there. Thank you so much. That's really, really helpful. Super. Okay, so the other thing that was on the table as you came in was a comment card. It's really not a card, it's a piece of paper, but whatever. You can speak tonight, or you can put comments on the comment card, or you can do both. We just want to make sure that if you wanted longer than a minute or two, you had, you know, something you really wanted to go in depth, you had a piece of paper to write it on. Some people don't like to speak. They may just want to write a comment card. So both and or neither is fine with me. Just make sure that you give it to one of us so that it actually can feed into the process. So I want to have next the team members stand up so you know who to talk to for information and who to talk to collect those cards at the end of the night. So Rachel, if you can stand up. And Rachel Belente is the acting executive officer for the California Water Commission. So she helps the commissioners do their work and helps them work strategically throughout the process on this issue. I thought Bree was there. No, she. Bree. Brianna Shoemaker is. Okay, she went to make copies. Okay. Brianna Shoemaker also is at the California Water Commission. She was standing at the back earlier. She has a red sweater on, so she's another person who you can ask for information from or ask for how to get more information. Jenny Marr, who's going to give most of the presentation tonight. Jenny Marr is with the Water Commission, and she's the program coordinator for this. So she's the person who keeps making sure that the commission gets the information it needs from the different agencies, makes sure that they're moving along. So she's has a wealth of information about the program, the deadlines, and how the project is working. The Center for Collaborative Policy, the two people who are working on this that are here tonight are Nicole Scanlon and I. Nicole's going to be taking notes tonight, and we'll try to get as many of those notes captured as possible. But again, if you don't want to make comment, put it on the comment card so we can include that. I'm the facilitator, and then there's another person, Dave Sepos, who is another facilitator who is helping run the stakeholder advisory committee that you'll hear about in Jenny's comments. So I'm so worried about you guys standing in the back of the room. You don't need chairs, you're good? Okay. All right, so I'm going to turn this over to Jenny, to Rachel, who's going to go over some of the overview of the program. Thank you. So it's 6:30. So we're going to go faster. Thank you.
All right. Hi, I'm Rachel Blonte. I am the Assistant Executive Officer of the California Water Commission. I want to thank everyone for being here. We've had a tremendous turnout, and we really appreciate you being here and being able to hear your comments. The purpose of the meeting tonight is twofold. One is to get your comments, but before we do that, we wanted to share some of the information about the program, about what is in Proposition 1, because that's really what's guiding the commission as they allocate these $2.7 billion. So you all should have copies of the PowerPoint in front of you. We're going to move through it quickly, and you can take that home as reference. So these are some of the questions that we're going to try and answer tonight for you. So as everyone should be well aware now, California is facing huge water issues, and the voters recognized that when they passed Proposition 1 back in November 2014, and that gave the commission responsibility to allocate $2.7 billion for the public benefits of water storage projects. The commission is developing the water storage investment program over the next 2 years to determine the best way to allocate that funding so the projects that are selected provide the most benefits to the public for the state funding that's being invested. So this is exactly what Proposition 1 says. The funding is for the public benefits associated with water storage projects that improve the operation of the state water system, are cost-effective, and provide a net improvement in ecosystem and water quality conditions. The California Water Commission, not a lot of people have heard of them prior to the passage of Proposition 1, but they've actually been around since the 1950s. They have a variety of tasks. They advise the Department of Water Resources, and they act as a public forum for water issues in the state. We have members with a broad variety of experience. We have 9 members, including the 2 who are here today, and they have experience in environment, agriculture, and business. They represent really diverse interests. And everything that the commission does is open to the public. All of their meetings are conducted in public. All of the materials that go to the commission are available on our website. And so the commission is really committed to stakeholder involvement and transparency. And so I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer Marr, Jenny Marr, who is our project manager for the Water Storage Investment Program, and she is going to walk you through a bit of what Proposition 1 requires of the commission before we move on to the public comment section of the evening.
Thanks, Rachel. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming. Your packet for the presentation is large. I'm going to skim through most of it. We put a lot of text on the slides so you had the information and can read it at your leisure. I know we're anxious to hear what you have to say, and you're anxious to say it, so I'm going to go through as quickly as possible. If there are some questions on some of the slides, we can touch base, or I can touch on them later, but I will just hit some of the highlights. So what did the legislation say? It's a competitive public process to rank projects, and competitive is key. You'll see later on from the scoping survey results, there's a greater need from a project perspective than funds available. So we want to make sure that this is a fair, competitive process. And this process is going to be banked on the return for public investment. And that's going to be measured by the magnitude of public benefits. And the legislation defined what those public benefits were. The public benefits must be associated with storage projects. I almost made a slip there. Water storage projects, and those eligible projects are CalFed projects, and those are Temperance Flats, Sites, Los Vaqueros, and InDelta Storage. Those are named by name. Groundwater storage projects and groundwater contamination prevention or remediation projects. Conjunctive use projects. Reservoir reoperation projects and local and regional surface storage projects. So those are the only eligible projects. This money is for projects. It's not for research and development. It's not for desalination. It's for storage projects. One of the key pieces of this legislation is the measurable improvements to the Delta. This is important to point out. No project shall be funded pursuant to this chapter unless it provides measurable improvements to the Delta ecosystem or the ecosystems of rivers tributary to the Delta. So that's important to note. That is a key eligibility requirement for projects that come in. They have to hit this mark. And I'll be honest, we are working with the Delta Stewardship Council to figure out what a measurable improvement in the Delta means. We're going to have metrics for every single one of these measures, but we're still determining what that is, and we're early in the process. And that's why we're coming out early to solicit information, and we hope to get some feedback about what you think measurable improvements in the Delta are. So public benefits. Again, this funding is solely for public benefits. And public benefits are defined as ecosystem improvements, water quality improvements, flood control benefits, emergency response, and recreation. So that's the $2.7 billion, what the commission can fund. So part of our process is to develop regulations, and those regulations need to include how the commission, in partnership with Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the State Board, and Water Department of Water Resources, will measure and manage the public benefits. Again, another thing that we're working with the agency team, and the agency team is DWR, the Commission, Fish and Wildlife, and the State Board, is to determine priorities and relative value for ecosystem and water quality benefits. Key question, how soon can funding be allocated? In the legislation, it is written that no funds can be allocated pursuant to this chapter until after December 15th, 2016. So that's key to note. That's why the commission is not outside passing money around to storage projects, because we want to be strategic. Not only do we want to be strategic, but the legislation doesn't allow us to distribute any funds. And again, you know, this allows us for some time to be strategic and develop the regulations. The regulations process is a formal rulemaking process that goes through the Office of Administrative Law. That process can take up to a year. In some cases, it's taken over a year. So we want to make sure that we develop our regulations and guidelines in a very quick time frame, which you'll see soon in a timeline, so we can get those into the formal rulemaking process, get them adopted before this date, and be ready to allocate funding. So the public benefit cost share. Money in the statute can fund no more than 50% of a total project cost. That's the cap. And we're saying that's a state funding cap. So if you use money from other chapters in Proposition 1, it's a total state share of 50%. No project may be funded unless it provides ecosystem improvements. And those ecosystem improvements have to be at least 50% of the public benefit cost share. So that's another key point. And we'll go through some slides that break that down a little bit easier to see in a pie chart. Eligibility requirements. So in order to submit an application and be eligible for funding under this program, feasibility studies for a project must be complete. The public draft of the environmental documentation must be out. The commission must make a finding that the project is feasible, and there's many measures of feasibility. There's constructability, there's financial feasibility, there's economic feasibility, there's environmental feasibility, and we'll have lots of criteria and lots of guidance on what that means to allow the commission to make a finding that a project is feasible. The project must advance the long-term objectives of restoring ecological health and improving water management for beneficial uses of the Delta. And the director, that's the director of DWR, the Department of Water Resources, receives commitments from not less than 75% of the non-public benefit cost share partners. So as it said in the previous slide, the commission funding can go up to 50% of the public benefits. But the other 50%, or whatever percentage that ends up being, must come from the beneficiaries of the non-public benefits. And those could be water users, it could be hydropower beneficiaries, whatever it must be, but there's a cost share that must occur. So the commission is committed to improving the overall health of our water management system. And really the keys here is the transparent, open public process, which you are now a part of, and we are just embarking on. This is our first official public meeting, but every commission meeting is open to the public. Every stakeholder advisory committee meeting is open to the public, and we want this to be a very open and transparent process. So, we're implementing the legislation through what we're calling the Water Storage Investment Program. So, we developed this program to comply with the statute, to take actions described in the California Water Action Plan, and for those of you who have not seen the California Water Action Plan, there's a link to it on the Commission's website, and it provides the overall strategic plan for water in the state for the next 5 years. One of those actions is expand water storage in California, which this will directly support. So our vision, our goals and objectives, and our principles are all outlined in a draft goals, objectives, and principles document, which is available on the Commission's website. I'm sorry we didn't print out a lot of the materials for you, just not knowing how many folks we were going to have. We wanted to at least make sure that everything's posted on the Commission website so you can grab it after this meeting. So the vision, after March 2017 and before January 2022, the Commission will commit the $2.7 billion in Proposition 1 funds to qualified water storage projects that will provide public benefits to California, improve the operation of the state water system, are cost-effective, and provide measurable improvements to the Delta and tributaries to the Delta. So again, the Commission's website, you can grab our document off of our goals, objectives, and principles document off of the website, and you can read some of the highlights in your packet. Program goals, again, that first one is provide for a transparent public process. Maximizing return for public investment, and supporting the co-equal goals in the Delta. Improving water supply reliability in average and dry years. Improving local and regional water supply reliability, self-reliance. And provide and promote incentives for integrated multi-benefit projects. And I will skip a lot of these objectives just in the interest of time, and you can read them at your leisure. Most of the objectives were taken from statute, so if you're familiar with the proposition itself, you'll see a lot of those again. Our principles. Principles are just how the Commission will implement the water storage program. They illustrate the values of the Commission members, and feel free that when you download this document, if you want to provide comments, you can comment through the website or provide comments to any of the staff directly. So I'll skip over these so you can read them. Just in recap, I think it's important to point out the eligible storage projects. If your project is not on this list, it is not an eligible storage project. It'll be bumped out of the application process by not being eligible. The public funds are for public benefits, and the statute defines the public benefits as ecosystem improvements, water quality improvements, flood control benefits, emergency response, and recreation. So any funds that come out of the Commission must be to support one of those five benefits, and one of the benefits of your project has to be ecosystem improvements. So this is just a graphic of the funding share. I think there was a couple copies of this available. I'm not sure that there was enough, but it just reiterates the maximum state cost share for public benefits is 50%. 50% of those must be ecosystem improvements. So based on the pie chart on the right-hand side, the green, the hot green, is the total funded public benefits if you had 25% ecosystem improvements. So you'd have 25% ecosystem improvements. Your other benefits, public benefits, would make up 25% for a total cost share of 50%. And the white side of the pie chart, again, is the non-public beneficiaries' cost share. So just our timeline, November 2014, started our timeline. The proposition was passed. We cannot allocate funding until December 15, 2016, which allows us time to enter the formal rulemaking process and develop regulations. We are going to speed that up as much as possible, and we're doing a lot of pre-formal rulemaking, public outreach, to get information about the regulations out, to streamline the formal rulemaking process, so we can get input early and often before we enter the formal rulemaking process. So we need to, by December 2016, have that deadline to finalize the regulations and begin funding programs by early 2017. So our communications and engagement program, there's several ways that you can participate. And as we've reiterated over and over, you've heard from almost everyone up here, public participation and stakeholder participation is key to our process. Commission meetings happen the third Wednesday of every month. They are always open to the public. Anything that's presented is posted on the commission's website. So the next meeting is April 15th in Fresno. Public meetings, this is our first public meeting. We'll have a series in April and a series at the end of the summer at a minimum. Stakeholder advisory committee meetings generally occur the first Wednesday of every month. We've just kicked off our stakeholder advisory committee. That meeting took place the first week in April. Our next meeting is May 4th. So anyone who's coming down for Aqua, you can participate in our stakeholder advisory committee meeting as a member of the public if you're not on the committee itself. Commission's website and listserv, you have a link in your document, and the scoping survey. The scoping survey was released on February 24th. We wanted to do that as a first step in our communications and engagement process and just get an idea of how well potential applicants knew the statute. In just over a month, we have received close to 170 responses of individual projects. Some of those responses were test answers that folks were just looking at, what the next question was. So we deleted some of those responses and based some statistics on 147. So the first one just represents the breakdown of potential applicant agency types. And this was a check to just make sure that the agencies that were responding were eligible applicants. The next slide represents the project type. So how did it break down based on project type for potential applicants? You'll see the largest pieces of the pie are groundwater storage and remediation and local and regional surface storage. Project timelines, we asked some very specific questions about where people were at in their feasibility and environmental documentation processes, just to see how our timing of having funding available coincided with people reaching those benchmarks of having feasibility studies complete and public drafts of environmental documents. And the majority of projects are looking at completion within the next 5 years. In most cases, it was within the next 4 years. But if that's the case, the funding will be available at a time when most projects are ready to receive it. So that was a good check for us. Public benefits, this was an interesting response. 112 respondents answered this question, so not everybody knew how to answer the public benefits question. And the key one here is the ecosystem improvements. Only 57% of the projects that responded to this question identified that they had ecosystem improvements. Looking back at the legislation, what I already went over, ecosystem improvements is an eligibility requirement. Every project funded must have ecosystem improvements. So we need, over time, to educate the project applicants about looking at their projects, reformulating in order to achieve some sort of ecosystem improvement. We need that percentage to be 100. So another one that we've talked about, a section in the statute, was the measurable improvements to the delta. Only 23% of projects indicated that their project provided measurable improvements to the delta. That's another criteria for eligibility in the program. Your project must provide measurable improvements to the delta or TRIBs to the delta. So that's another one that we need that percentage to get up to 100% to make sure all projects that apply for funding under this program are eligible. project costs. Only 67% of projects that respond or respondents that answered this question reported costs. And total project costs represented by our survey was over $12.5 billion. So if we took that and went to 50% of that amount, it's well above what the commission has to fund. And this is only representing about 70% of the projects. So that number is just going to get higher. And it goes back to the importance of why we need a competitive process and a fair and transparent process. So cost based on project type, you'll see the biggest slice of that pie is the CalFed surface storage projects. But just to let folks know, three of the four CalFed projects responded with project cost. So they're representing almost 100% of their funding amount, whereas local, regional, and surface storage, groundwater storage, reservoir re-op, and conjunctive use, only about half of those projects responded with cost. So you'll see that pie chart over time shift quite a bit. So just kind of hammering home this idea of eligibility, we've got our eligible project types, groundwater storage, surface storage, conjunctive use, and system re-op. And we had lots of projects respond that were planning projects, desal, research and development, formation of groundwater sustainability areas. Under this program, those are ineligible. So we're trying to get down to those storage projects that are not only eligible projects, they are eligible projects that provide some level of ecosystem improvements, and they must provide benefits to the delta or tributaries to the delta. So if we wean down in our results, that represented about 15% of the total projects that responded to the survey. So we've got some education to do and some reformulation of some of these projects just to get them to some level of eligibility. So what's next? The survey is going to stay open. So if you represent an agency that has a surface or a storage project that you would like funded under this program, you still have time to respond and have your answers be put into the next round of statistics. The survey is not any commitment to putting in an application. It's not guaranteeing you're going to be eligible. It's just an information education step. Currently, we're working with a technical team to develop processes and support for quantifying and managing the public benefits, trying to figure out what does that mean, what are our metrics, and what kind of technical assistance we can provide to project applicants. And the big one, developing draft regulations, guidelines, and a proposal solicitation package as quickly as possible to start the formal rulemaking process. And we've got that whole process scrunched down to less than a year. So we're going to move fast, and we're going to need a lot of stakeholder and public input in a short amount of time. So our goal is to develop a process that supports fair competition. We've got lots of different project types that are eligible. We're going to have a lot of technical requirements and economic feasibility requirements, and we want to provide enough technical support and guidance to make sure projects come in and we can do an apples-to-apples comparison. In reality, we're probably going to get a mix of things, and so our process has to be flexible and adaptable to whatever projects that we get, and we want to definitely provide support and guidance along the way to applicants.
Great. So you guys have another microphone? Great. So I'm going to start right here, and Brianna, where are you? There she is, Bree. So I'm going to start at this table, and I'm just going to move zigzag through the room to find out who wants to make a comment. So at this table, do you have a question or a comment or a suggestion for the water commissioners? And if you have a question, it would really help me if you said it's for a commissioner or it's for staff. So anybody here have a question or a comment? Yes, please.
Out of the $7 billion bond we passed, you say your agency is only responsible for 2.4?
So of the $7 billion,
The water commissioner has the authority for 2.5.
2.7. The water commission will oversee $2.7 billion. The remainder of the $7.545 billion bond will be administered through the Department of Water Resources and a lot of local conservancies who have specific amounts allocated to their regions.
Thanks. I'm going to go. Oh, did you have a question, sir?
I do.
Yes. Bree, can you give? So, can you guys tell me what I'm doing with interference? You good? All right. Thanks. Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you. With this bond, you know, it was sold and voted as, you know, basically a reservoir project. And I think that's what the bulk of the people expected out of it. And with that, there's pieces and parts that are directly allocated for the ecosystems, et cetera. And now we're finding that there are all these other things. And we keep coming up with the Delta and the Bay Delta Conservatory and the Bay Delta Plan and its entanglement on everything that gets done in this state. Why is it that, you know, the ecological considerations have to be so impacted in this project?
Okay. Because
it's very simple what we're trying to get.
Okay. So you thought you were voting for reservoirs. Why are there other requirements? You thought you were voting for only reservoirs. Why are there other things?
The thing is, we know there's reservoirs, but embedded in the 2.7, we have to meet all these ecological requirements.
Got it.
And it's just
how come that happened? Okay.
So remember, the money that we will spend will be... anybody who wants to add to this, but the money that the commission will oversee is not all of the money that will be needed for these reservoirs. It's the portion of the reservoir where the water is reserved for non-ratepayers, so to speak. It's the environment. It's the public benefits portion of it. It will not be the portion that builds the dam, but it will be the portion that may help the reservoir get completed financially. There's going to have to be a lot of hard work done by the proponents of these projects, and I believe I see one of them who's a proponent of a project that you're all interested in here. We'll have to work very hard at finding other resources from the federal government, from water ratepayers, from energy issues, because I know sites has a pump storage component that's very important. This bond did not pass with the sole idea that the state would finance these reservoirs. It was passed with the idea that the state would finance, or at least help finance, the portions of the reservoir that ratepayers and water users didn't actually get, that had to be reserved for ecological restoration or could be reserved for emergency circumstances to move to other areas. It's very complicated. But it was never designed to be, here's $2.7 billion, go build a reservoir. It was for a specific portion that will help get these reservoirs built because there's nobody else to pay for them, is essentially the theory.
Well, we have a senator in the room, and I'd just be curious if that was their take on legislation that got passed and put on the ballot.
Okay, so I'm going to wait until there's two or three more legislative questions and then ask them to comment. Is that okay? All right. So, anybody else? So, do you folks have a question or comment? Yes, ma'am.
I just have a comment or I guess a question. You want, at the very end of the day, for this to be equitable. But yet it seems to me that the plan basically centers around an ecological standards rather than be more equitable. You want it 100% ecological, and I don't know that that's actually possible.
Okay, so equitable to you would be more than 50% ecosystem. It would be some more than that.
Less.
Okay, yeah. Thanks. So, thank you. Rachel.
So ecosystem benefits have to be a part of every project, but they do not have to be everything that the commission funds. And they don't necessarily have to be the full 50%, 25% of, I'm getting into percentages here.
So let me just comment. No project has to do anything for the ecology. The only problem is we cannot fund any portion of a project except the portion of the project that has to do with ecological benefits, stormwater, and that's our stormwater, flood control, emergency response, recreation, and I believe there's one, water quality. That's the portion of the money that's been allocated to the Water Commission to help with projects who have financing for water, to deliver water to water users, farm, urban, suburban, whatever, but don't have the money necessarily to pay for the portion of it that will be reserved for the ecology or for emergency response or for a water quality, as I just said. So it's a part of a larger package. None of these projects are simple projects to start with. The feds will play a role. Others will play a role. Every water agency here understands the value of water. So it's going to be important to keep that in mind. This is not the funding mechanism that will fund the whole project, but a portion of the project.
Okay, so
and
I saw...
anytime you feel need, you know, would like to comment, that's fine too.
Okay, but so I saw in that answer, your question, ma'am, and in the answer, several people wanting to ask more questions. So I will get to you, but I want to make sure we go this way. So let's kind of stick with this theme of what does the money fund and what can't it fund? Let's sort of get all of that. Sir, you had a different question?
No.
Okay.
Yes, you can.
You can ask anything you want. I was making sure that we got that theme out. But you can ask anything you want. So you, sir, noted that you wanted to say something, and then let's see who else at this table.
Well, I'm probably too confused to ask a question. But could you be more specific on how this money, since we know it's all going to go to Sites Reservoir, can you tell us how those monies would be allocated there? Is it going to be used still for more draft environmental impact statements? Do we go through that process again and finance it with this? How will the money specifically be used if Sites Reservoir is the one and only?
So if Sites asked for the money, what could the Sites money go for?
Yes.
Could it go for this, that? Okay.
Yeah.
Who can answer?
First of all, the question can't be answered, but I can now. At some point, it will be answered.
We voted on the basis you had the answer.
Right now, we have the questions. Yeah. Right now, we have the questions. Sites is a project that's been well studied and well thought out. But the portion of the money that was allocated through the bond is only for those categories that we spoke about. Now, that doesn't mean that when you're pouring cement, this portion of the cement is the ecological portion. What it means is the governance, the rules for that storage facility will have to include the concerns that are raised by the request for the money. So that there has to be an ecological restoration or an ecological component for the streams and waterways that feed into sites that are in the northern San Joaquin Valley, or that's the thing. It's not like this portion of the facility will be built by this money. The people who are building this facility have to patch the whole thing together, which is no simple task. And we're encouraging people to work as much together in the region, and there seems to be a real consensus in this region about this facility. Bring as many resources to the table as possible, and these resources are eligible when you can show in a way that we can measure, and we're going to try to set these guidelines up, that this portion of the project will be to help restore these streams, these fisheries, these ecological benefits. That's the way it's going to work. It'll be a part of a larger package. It's not for a specific element of the project.
Let me just follow up. And then I just want to move on so that everybody gets a chance.
Just to follow up, please. In regard to Sites, though, Reservoir, we will not know, at least for 1 year, what the beneficial uses could be prescribed, nor do we know the some other details. So how are people going to develop their plan without all these measurables?
That's a good question, and that's what we're working on. The people who are developing the Sites program are smart people, and they see the guidelines that we're working under, so they will begin to factor in those guidelines and what their facility will actually do, and they will say, look, we believe our project provides at least 40% of our project will provide ecological benefits. That request will be made. It'll be reviewed. Yeah.
Sir?
Our local paper says the state has 1 year of water left. And I hear talk of 2017 and 2022. Also, where were these smart people when the Central Valley groundwater and below and south of that, the water has dropped so low for so long that the total land mass has dropped 50 feet. As far as you can see, 50 feet, the whole land has dropped down. Where was this water planning and all that back then? And we're only talking about a 4-year drought. The drought's been going on for 20 years. That's why the Central Valley and below is out of water.
I wish I could answer your question. This is the most severe drought, at least in measurable history, California measurable history, and maybe in 1,000 years. It's really hard to plan for water. You people live and die by it. You realize how complicated it is. This is our opportunity to try to address precisely those kinds of questions. Will we be able to do it with $2.7 billion in the next 5 years? You know, God bless us if we can, but it's going to be an ongoing process that's going to change the way we do business and the way we approach water. This is the start. That's the best I can do. There is no answer for your question except for the fact that this is where we are.
Okay. At this, yes, sir. Did you want, you next, sir?
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Okay. So out of the $7.5 billion that's in Prop 1 bond, there's $4.8 billion left. You say DWR and local conservancies are going to administer that money. Are they doing the same outreach you're doing? And are there sites that you can direct us to? Because that's a major portion, and it seems like mm-hmm. that's where the infrastructure, and this is more for eco concerns.
Okay, so where else do you go to make sure your concerns?
Where else do we know where we can get some of this $4.8 million?
Do we know that?
Well, some people do. We're going to oversee the 2.7 for storage. There are other elements of the Department of Water Resources sources that will be handling other kinds of groundwater issues, cleaning up of water, recycling of water. Those are the kind of issues that will be dealt through the normal Department of Water Resources process. Rachel may be able to help you.
We are going to add a link on our website to DWR's funding page. They have a page that lists all of the different programs where folks can look for Proposition 1 money. In terms of outreach, I think a lot of the programs are doing it right now. They are on a very quick timeline, and they will all be doing, at the very minimum, 3 public meetings across the state. So we will provide the link to that on our website.
But it's definitely a different funding process.
Okay, great. Yes, sir.
It was clear to some of the voters that this bond included groundwater storage. My senator and my assemblyman seemed to think that it was, and a lot of the people in this room seemed to think that it was exclusively for surface storage. But groundwater storage, as the presenters have put up on the board there, is definitely part of the storage strategy here. And I want to make sure that groundwater-dependent farmers, groundwater-dependent citizens of this area are involved as groundwater management, groundwater storage, conjunctive use, and reservoir reoperation that incorporates groundwater into it, are kept fully informed of this as the Sacramento Valley groundwater system continues to move toward integration with the state water supply. I think it poses some great risks to the majority of the people who are not attached to surface irrigation districts here in the North State. And so I appreciate the commission coming up here, and I'm hoping that we can keep the citizens informed on how these storage projects are moving forward underground, because those are a lot harder to track than these giant surface storage projects that are being presented.
Thanks. What we didn't get a chance to talk about is the membership of the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. And if you go to the commission's website, there is a list of who's on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, and that's one of the things that the commissioners paid attention to when they put together that Stakeholder Advisory Committee, is getting a full range of members. So
I just want to make one comment, though. the statute is pretty clear what's eligible or potentially eligible and how they get to be eligible. One of the things we are going to look very carefully at is how to integrate. I mean, you brought up a fascinating point that could look like it's a competition between one sort of storage versus another sort of storage. We're looking for the larger concept of a project, not just a site-specific, and I don't mean to use the word sites inappropriately there, but that somehow manages to integrate regionally all of the potential storage in a region that also, you know, there has to be a measurable impact on the delta. That is not at issue here. But if we're looking at all the money must go in one basket or another basket, we are probably not going to maximize the capabilities of storage if we somehow figured to get those two baskets working together. And the conjunctive use concept, and you're all familiar with it, you have to have surface storage to do conjunctive use. There's no question about it. But you also have to have a larger vision of what you're doing with the storage so that it goes from the upper watershed all the way out to the flow into the ocean. And how that water is going to be best utilized for the needs in the region and the needs of the state and how it can best be integrated. This is not a simple task. We're not going to jump into this and say, oh, this is the way it's going to be, because we've got at least a year for everybody to get their projects together and figure out how to work with each other and bring in the most beneficial project possible. And I can say honestly that your project, or I won't say your project, I will say that the site's project that people are interested in here has been called out by name in the statute. And there's a lot of studies that have been done, but for the way to really make this work for the state, it's going to be for everybody to figure out how to do the maximum amount of storage, regionally speaking. And it's going to have to take some thinking that's not normally getting done. And I'll just, one of my favorite topics is upper watershed management. If forestry is managed properly, more water gets into the ground, more water percolates into the ground, the streams are cleaner, more water flows into the reservoir that we may build. It has to be one concept as opposed to six different concepts of storage. The region has to come together, and what has gotten me so excited about this meeting is that this region has a very strong sense of what its needs are. But it's more than one simple thing. It's really trying to figure out, this is the chance we're going to get. We're not going to get a lot of money to do it with. So we can't say, okay, all the money's going in this one basket. God, let's hope it works. The region needs to come together with the most efficient, most financially leveraged capabilities as possible. And this is a damn good start, I might add. So rather than say it's this project over that project, we're trying to get away from that. We want to hear how will your project, the whole region, benefit, and not just one project. How do we tie all the projects that feed into that and make that the center of your water policy? It's complicated.
Okay. I'm going to keep moving around the room, zigzagging between the tables. I'm going to get in there and move the mic myself. So I want to make sure that people have a chance to contribute, and we keep moving. So some balance between moving and talking. I'll come back this way and get you, sir. So
take a mic.
This way, and then I'm going to go to you, ma'am, and then you, ma'am. Yes, sir.
My name's Seth Fyack. I'm a rice and walnut farmer from Glenn County.
We're good.
And I respectfully request that the commission select site's reservoir. The reservoir can effectively provide all the ecosystem improvements required by all the public benefits. Without a supply of surface water, communities will continue to be forced to tap into failing groundwater reserves, thereby struggling to bring groundwater basins into balance. Due to groundwater management's early beginnings, the need for this increased storage capacity is fundamental to the supplement of groundwater supplies in the years of drought, clearly currently contaminating groundwater basins. Site's reservoir, I mean, this is spoken from a letter that was sent to you back on February 25th of 2015 and signed by numerous other state assemblymen. And I would like to reiterate these issues that not only that, in the rice country with a DU study that said that if we replaced rice ground with managed wetlands, the cost to do that would be another $2 billion in California alone, with another $30,000 annually for upkeep.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. I'm going to go this way and then back this way, ma'am. There you go.
I'd like to know what the how the public will be able to comment on the projects that meet your criteria. Will we be able to see all of the projects on the website, and then as they proceed through your process, will we be able to provide commentary?
Great. So what's the process?
Jennifer, do you want to respond to that? She's asking,
I'm okay.
What's the public's capability of actually seeing the projects that are being proposed and commenting on them?
Yes, as the projects meet your criteria, you know, and are narrowed down to that 15%, how do we get involved in commenting?
Great. Thanks, ma'am. So the process. Yes, Jenny.
Yeah, so the process, there'll be lots of opportunity to get involved in informing how the benefits are calculated and measured, and that work will be done over the summer. But once projects come in and applications are received, the projects likely will not be daylighted until the commission has a chance to deliberate and make their findings, and then their findings will be presented at a commission meeting probably almost 2 years from now. Does that answer your question?
So along the way, does the public comment on each project? I like number one, I don't like number two. Or not until the commission has chosen it?
It would likely be once the commission has made findings and there's a short list. So there wouldn't be opportunity to comment on every project. There'll be some screening for eligibility, for application completeness, and generally projects aren't put forth in a public forum until they've been screened to some extent.
Okay. Now, just to let people know, I'm going to keep moving the mic and keep standing among you so I can make sure I get people in the queue and move you along. So I'm trying to do both and balance that, talking quickly and moving along and making sure you participate. Yes, ma'am.
I want to talk a bit about what I'm calling the low-flow showerhead type of project. If only one person in L.A. puts in low-flow fixtures, it makes no difference. If everybody in L.A. does it, it does make a difference in water consumption. The same process holds up here. I was interested in the water plan conservancy allocations, where a small watershed in Southern California got almost $5,000 an acre, and the Sierra Nevada Conservancy got less than 60 cents an acre, which indicates that the legislature knows where the votes are, but they're a little vague on where the water comes from.
Great. So, hang on. So the first question, Mr. Curtin, is that the kind of thing that's eligible for funding?
Well,
let me just address what you're saying, because I understand it.
Okay.
The nature of politics here is pretty complicated, pretty confusing, and very, very frustrating. We have nothing to do with how that money is going to be spent in the conservancies, how it got allocated. The low-flow showerheads are coming because I don't think the State Water Resources Control Board is going to hold off much longer. I sympathize 100%.
I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about the application of that type of thinking to this region. For example, there's been studies done that if you did thinning in the Feather River watershed, that you could increase the flow in the Feather River by up to 6%. And 6% of an average flow would be 3.5 sites reservoirs. If you're doing it on the maximum flow in the Feather River, we're talking about 8 sites reservoirs. Second low flow opportunity is answered by the question, what percentage of the flow in the Sacramento River is produced by small streams of less than 2,000 acre feet or 3 CFS. And using some numbers from...
Ma'am, I want you to be a little bit shorter so you can, your colleagues can also get in.
Well, it's 10 to 15%, but those are the streams that are now drying up, the streams that used to have run year-round and have salmon. The Sacramento is a losing stream starting in Grimes 30 years ago. It's now a losing stream all the way up to Red Bluff.
So what is it that you want the Water Commission to prioritize when they give out water storage money?
I would like the Water Commission to think about small projects. And it's very difficult to get a small project through any of the processes because the whole setup is designed for major projects.
Thank you. Thank you. So small projects and big projects.
We don't have a formula for how we're going to spend the money, to be blunt about it. What we're hoping is that the people in this region and in other regions will begin to take the kind of holistic look, but it, in many cases, will be focused around a storage facility. But to dismiss all the other potential projects out there because they're not big enough, I don't think we're going there either. So we will try to figure out the best way possible. I have no answer for you at this point, but if we can invest $5 million in a small project that has the ability to bring $5, $10, $15, $20, $25, $30 million from other sources to do the kind of things you're talking about, that will definitely be on our agenda because if it increases water flow, that's a different form of storage. But we're not going to spend $2.7 billion on small projects either. So the best we hope for is that regions come together with large and small projects, above and in some cases below ground projects. You can maximize your storage and sites if you have places to park water underground when there's an extreme flow event. Not just fill it up once, fill it up twice in a season if there's places to put it. But let's face it, if we do better watershed management, we'll get more water flow into the watershed. That's the objective. We may have resources available to help those kind of small projects as long as they're hooked into conjunction with a larger project that helps the entire system. That's the kind of thinking that we're grappling with. That's why we're here, to hear these precise kinds of ideas. We respect the fact that people are really concerned about the site's dam. It's a good dang project. I know that. We all know that. But in the context of how we're operating, we have to take a look at everything, and we have to encourage people who are putting sites together, some of whom I know are here, to think a little bit out of the box and bring in some of these regional solutions that may not have been the way people thought about this just 4 or 5 years ago.
Great.
That's the challenge.
So I know people are sort of catching my eye. I've got you in the queue if you've caught my eye and I've nodded at you, but I'm going to keep moving this way so that we can get the maximum number of people, short as possible, to give the advice to the commission. Yes, sir.
On the site's reservoir, $2.7 billion, that doesn't seem very much money for the original version of the site's reservoir. And is this a cut-down version of the site's reservoir?
Yes, sir. Thank you. So to fund sites, this doesn't seem like the amount that it needed.
Don't really have an answer for that. That's not the funding, the complete funding for sites, 2.7. And even if it was, it wouldn't go to sites. It's just not possible because we can't fund more than half the cost. And even that's a stretch. I believe sites is in the $3.5 billion range. I think there's a sites person back there who knows this a lot better than I do. He probably goes to sleep at night with these numbers running through his head. We may be able to help complete that project. We're encouraging this region to come up with the most inventive, the best way to use the money. If we just put all the money in one spot, it's not the best way utilization of the money. You're all taxpayers up here. If we maximize our input and we get 3 or 4 times the amount for our investment, we're going to get 3 or 4 times the amount of infrastructure. That's part of our goal.
Okay, ma'am.
You keep addressing the topic of more water storage. We really need to be addressing the cause of the water storage. It is known that this drought is man-made. So when you allow the rains to come back to California, I'll vote for more water storage.
Is there somebody else at this table? Okay, I've got you when I come back this way. Okay,
anybody,
yes, sir.
Back, further back?
Yeah, I'm going to zigzag. The only way to do this fair is to zigzag. Sorry.
Looking at the report here, there's a fine timeline, let's call it 60-month window
for funding after March 17th, before January 2022. If we miss that window of January 2022, where do those funds go? Second of all, the whole key to the success of these projects is environmental impact. What are we doing to expedite the process and review on environmental impact through the ecosystems in the site's reservoir area?
So,
thank you.
I'm not sure of the question, but if we have a five-year window, which starts in about a year and a half to 2 years, we believe we're going to have a lot of projects thrown at us, far more than we're going to be able to fund. And if we can't figure out how to fund them because we just can't figure it out, shame on us. That money will get spent. I can almost guarantee it, because the people who are starting to produce these projects are really putting some thought into how to best make their project proposals. So when the time comes when we finally have our regulations in place and we will start allocating money, there will be no shortage of potential projects. One of the things we're going to ask the staff to do is to work with the project proposers to see if they can be put together with other projects that make sense putting them together. If not, don't do it. But if yes, then we have a different approach. But we'll have, I believe we will have that money spent within that five-year window. I think, as Jenny said, those projects came in and they're not ready quite yet for the money, but they will be in a couple of years when the money's available. And the more thinking that goes into those projects now, the better the projects are going to be. I wasn't sure about the other stuff you asked.
Okay. I have at least five people in the queue. This gentleman was trying to get in when I was up there, so I'm going to go this way and then to this table right here.
Hi, my name's Mark Spanville. I'm Chief of Staff for Congressman LaMalfa from up here in Chico. Thank you, everybody, for coming tonight. Appreciate seeing everybody and Senator Nielsen and Assemblyman Gallagher. And you all coming up. On behalf of the congressman, who unfortunately is in D.C. tonight, they have votes this evening, so couldn't be here in person, did want to come by and let you know the federal efforts that we're putting in to assist On Sites Reservoir. We do have bipartisan legislation, everything being done on a bipartisan effort to put forward Sites Reservoir to expedite funding for the studies and the federal authorization of the project, which is really the conjunctive use that we'd like to see with the state. And this is a project that passed the House of Representatives last year. It didn't end up getting just over the line in the Senate, had broad bipartisan support in the Senate, but these things are going because this project is a project that works for the entire state, but protects us here in the North State most of all. It adds water to the system for everything. It is an off-stream storage. It doesn't affect... We're not going to have fish problems. We're going to have a net benefit to fish because we have more water in the system. This year, you know, Assemblyman Gallagher mentioned it earlier, even in this drought situation, we had Sites Reservoir today. In this drought situation, we get 900,000 acre-feet extra. That's water that can go to make sure that our folks here in Northern California, wouldn't see the cuts we see today. We wouldn't be talking about, even in this drastic drought, we wouldn't be talking about 25% cuts. We'd be under 10. In fact, with the number of acre feet that the governor's talking about trying to save, we'd already be over half of that with this project in place. And it helps everything up and down, you know, through the Delta and everything. He asked me to come here and advocate on its behalf, let you know that federally we are working hard across the board, across the state, up and down to make this happen, with all of our partners here. And thank you all. We need your voices. We need you to step in and be loud.
Thanks. So, was there anybody at this table who wanted to? Okay. Over here. Yes, ma'am. Oh, sorry.
Hello. I'm Loretta Torres, and my husband and I farmed on the west side. And I still farm a little rice over there in Glenn County. He was a board member for Willow Creek Mutual Water Company for 53 years. And he always told me, Sites Reservoir, Sites Reservoir, Sites Reservoir. He also told me that Southern California wants our water and they will do anything to get it. Now, my question, because we were asked to NLI, please, I do want you to know, I think you guys have a job that only Solomon is going to be able to split this baby. But I want you to know we're with you on this. We want more storage in California. But my question is in the details. The devil is in the details. If you'll turn to page 9, section 79758 says, surface storage projects funded pursuant to this chapter and described in subdivision A, section 7951, which I couldn't find here, may be made a unit of the Central Valley Project as provided in section 1129, which also isn't here. Can you explain to me, somebody on this commission, that when we go to Wikipedia and define and find the definition for the Central Valley Project, it is a U.S. reclamation project devised in 1933 in order to provide irrigation and municipal water to much of California's Central Valley by regulating and storing water in reservoirs in the water-rich Northern California of the state, half of the state, and transporting it to the water-poor San Joaquin Valley. So as long as this may be in there, this on page 9, I would like some assurances that the Central Valley Water Project is not going to be included and be sending this water south.
Okay, so you're worried about that may, and is it, okay. So, Jenny?
We had our legal counsel for the commission look into this one, and just for clarification, when the statute says Central Valley Project, Central Valley Project was originally authorized by state government. So CVP in the statute means CVP or SWP. And so it's just giving cover mostly to the CalFed projects because we're working at a state agency level and with federal partners on those projects. And those projects may become have the option of becoming part of the CVP or SWP. And both of those water systems do provide water to Southern California as contractors. So that's just opening the door for some of these projects that they'd like to be recognized. They can have joint facilities or partner with the federal government to become formally part of the CVP or SWP. It's not a requirement.
It's a may.
Yes, it's their choice. It's the choice of the project applicant and proponents.
Okay.
I think Senator Nielsen fought pretty hard to protect existing water rights. I don't know enough. I'm not a lawyer, thank God. But that's something you worry about all the time, and I understand that. I don't think that really has the application. Of course, I'm saying that now. It's easy for me to say, but I think the point is there are other facilities being proposed that south of the Delta that might be part of the CVP. So it's, I don't know.
Okay, so I'm going over to this table, and as I've said before, I'm trying to be fair, go quickly, and get the most participation. Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm Dennis Moreland from Oroville. I'm a retired operating engineer. I was a young man when they built Oroville Dam. There was no feasibility studies, no environmental impact report. It was one of the finest projects ever built, the biggest public work jobs in the state of California. That was almost 50 years ago. It's played out. It's wore out. We need another round of state water projects like that. This site has been on the map since they built Lake Oroville. Why does it take this long to build a dam? I mean, we're going to run out of water. We're out of water now. You need to expedite all this funding, fast track that site, get it built. You need at least 4 or 5 more to Fresno in these eastern foothills and catch all this flood water. Las Molinas area that flooded. All that water could have been saved.
Okay. So why does it take so long? You've already answered why it takes so long and the two-year window. Anything else to add to that?
No, that's a damn good question.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Yes, my name is Dale Eiler. I'm with the Yuba Center Chamber of Commerce and representing many of the businesses down in the Yuba City, Marysville area and Yuba and Sutter counties. We voted with a concern, or our concentration was for Sites Reservoir for that project. And it's very disconcerting to many of our businesses to hear that these funds may go out to many, many other projects and that the one that we voted for may not be completed because the funds are being distributed as they have. So that's not really a question. It's just a comment on what our businesses are thinking in the Yuba Sutter area.
So a real sense of concern. I'm sorry, the guy in the white shirt, I missed you. Do you want to jump in the queue?
Yeah, Bruce Ross. I'm the district director for Assemblyman Brian Daly, and thank you so much for being here, the commission and the people who arranged it and everybody, because I've been to these meetings where the whole dog and pony show comes up north and you get nine people, so I think the turnout in the room shows just how important this is to people. The Assemblyman is an enthusiastic supporter of Sites Reservoir for a lot of reasons, but I wanted to address one point a couple people raised early when the skepticism about ecosystem benefits and, you know, when you put a lot of money into storage, you want to see water that, frankly, will be of use to people. I'll tell, last week in Redding, there was a meeting about how they're closing the top of the Sacramento River to fishing because the winter run salmon there was almost a total failure last year. They're the most critically endangered fish, I think, in the river at this point. And what everybody in that room was talking about is, oh, you're giving too much money, too much water to the farmers. You need to hold back more water for the fish. And whether you support that or not, whether you think those people are right or not, that's the law currently, that there's a lot of pressure in that domain. So those ecosystem services, if you can invest in them smart, in a good way, you end up with more water for the farmers, and it's not going to be taken away. So that's just a cold reality of the way the law is. But in that vein, I did have one question. There was a mentioned earlier that when it comes to weighing the value of ecosystem services, that will be done by Fish and Game. Are they doing a similar, are they on your parallel timeline? Are they going to be holding meetings to where they run through that publicly?
Yeah, so Fish and Game, I know that Jenny, you had a comment about that earlier.
Yeah, we're working closely with Fish and Wildlife and the State Board and the Delta Stewardship Council, and they're on the same deadlines that we are. So in order to figure out their ecosystem and water quality priorities and relative value, that has to be part of the regulations package. So we're working closely with them over the summer and through the fall to get that information together and adopt it by their respective agencies and into the regulations. They will be presenting information on their process at the Stakeholder Advisory Committee in May and in June, and again at the commission meetings. So you will be able to hear what their thinking is for their priorities and relative value as they're developed.
Okay, as I'm working back this side, I'm catching your eyes in the next row and the next row. So this gentleman here is next for a comment. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm Tama County Supervisor Bob Williams, and thank you, Jen, for opening the door. It was a great segue. One of my questions, and I've got a couple here, so I'm just going to go all through all of them, is while you're developing the guidelines and the scoring criteria, the statement was made there'd be no competition, but if there's no competition, why is there scoring? But my question is, when is that criteria expected? And will there be public input in the development of that criteria, i.e. meetings in Northern California, so people can have input on that? And then part two of my question is, since your funding becomes available in December of 2016, or basically January of 2017, and does not close until 2022, once that funding is allocated, is that funding gone, or what happens if another project comes in that actually scores higher on your criteria? Does it trump an existing project and they lose funding accordingly?
Thank you, sir.
Very good questions. I'll try to answer them together. So our vision and in the legislation was to allocate the funding by January 2022. It does make allowances that if projects are stuck in litigation or do not have all their permits by that time, the funding goes into escrow and it waits until the project is ready. Since the legislation stipulates that we do this in a competitive process, and that competitive process will be based on the magnitude of public benefits, we're envisioning at this point one solicitation. So all the projects come in at once. We can evaluate the projects on their ability to meet the statute. I don't think the commission would like us to rank all the projects, but we'll make our recommendations as staff for the commission, and they'll make the final determinations on what projects move forward based on the statute itself, the draft, or which will be final at the time, goals, objectives, and principles document. So that will form the development of the program and the values of the commission. So you'll have enough, that's available. So if you wanted to see that and make comments on that, that starts to describe what the criteria will be developed around. And then for the criteria themselves, we're just starting on this process. So over the summer, you'll start to see some of those criteria materialize, and it'll all be done in a public process in the commission meetings, as part of the stakeholder advisory committee meetings. We want to get as much feedback as possible. As it was alluded to earlier, this is a very challenging and difficult process, and all the projects are at different stages in readiness, have used different evaluation methodologies, so we've got to make sure we develop a flexible process. What we're doing right now is developing some early guidance, or at least drafts of early guidance, to present to the commission in the next couple of months of what we're calling common assumptions, preferred assumptions, and areas of variability. So some of those things we'll come forward with and say, for your project, you must use these kind of baselines, because we want to make sure that when we're looking at applications that it's as close to apples as we can get. But as you can see, it's green apples, yellow apples, red apples, apples with worms, apples with bites. So we want to make sure that at a minimum, projects have some similar baseline. We also want to provide technical assistance and guidance. So in the absence of better information, we want to provide preferred assumptions or preferred economic unit values or some information that project applicants can use. And then for folks that have been down this road a long way, they have their own feasibility study, it's already down the process, they've got their draft environmental documentation, and they did an absence of any of this guidance, there's some flexibility there for you to say, I did it this way because. So there's some, we're trying to build some variability into this process, but there'll be some restrictions for baseline, and that'll be developed for folks to comment on in the next few months.
Well, God bless you for that long explanation, but I'm going to ask you to, because we're pretty plain talking up here, are the folks up here going to be able to have input on that criteria without having to go to a meeting in Sacramento or access and go on online and make comments online? Will there be public meetings in Northern California?
So let me answer that question, just to speed things along. It sounds like from many people that you want another public meeting, and that's one of the things you want to weigh in on, and only having the option of giving comment on the website or only having an option of the stakeholder advisory committee giving some input is not enough. Okay, so they'll think about that, and I don't work for them, I work for Sac State, but they'll think about that. That's not a decision yet. Yes, sir, you were next. Yes, sir. You're next, man.
And I'm Dennis Garten, supervisor of Tehama County also. Part of the problem, you talk about the website, we still have residents that only have dial-up, and they cannot even download what you're talking about having available.
Okay.
They can't get to it to read it.
Okay, so we need to figure out something better than that. Thanks for letting us know. We'll figure that out. That's exactly the kind of thing that's in my job description to do, so we'll fix that. Yes, ma'am.
California farmers help feed the world. They have in the past. It's not going to happen this year. And my question is, since you're in the regulatory process right now, can we do something about it being fish over people? Because it's time to forget the Delta smelt and take care of feeding the people.
Okay. We're going to try and move along, try and get as many people as possible. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that was a question.
Well, not at the State Water Commission, but if you want to change basic state law, it's a lift, but it's potentially doable. And if the drought gets worse, the pressure to do more will be there. But we're going to work within the context of what we've got until we're told we have to do it otherwise. And we're going to try to get the most public storage, the most water storage possible for the state of California out of $2.7 billion. That's what we're going to do.
So can we not cut back on the ecosystem qualifications?
So
not as things exist now, unless there's an emergency declaration and the governor decides that, you know, everything goes in this direction.
I thought this was an emergency.
Okay, so
I'm not suggesting it, I might have.
So several people here said it. They thought it was an emergency. So Rachel or one of the assemblymen, the emergency legislation and declarations that the governor's met have not yet done anything for the authority of the California Water Commission?
No, the emergency are
no.
The water cutbacks, and no, there's no statutory change in terms of the co-equal goals, which are new developments since my friend from the operating engineers built the dam last time. There were no co-equal goals. There are now. And that's a discussion that you could have, but that's not the one that we're going to be dealing with.
Okay, so they can't do anything. You need another route for that. Yes, sir.
Yeah, my question is not meant to be rude or disrespectful, but looking at the state's past record managing bond projects, can we be assured that will be graft and corruption and transparent?
Can you be assured that there will be no such thing? I wish you could. I wish I could. But the state does have a track record of success, and some of it's successful, and some of it's not, and some there's corruption, and when there's corruption, go get them. Tear them limb from limb. It doesn't make my job any easier, I can tell you that right now.
Next.
Kenny Elwood, Lassen Canyon Nursery. Has there been any studies done on cleaning out or dredging our existing reservoirs? I know there's been a lot of topsoil that's probably leached in there that you could probably make a lot of money on and maybe do some of the funding or even most of these fundings.
Thank you.
I do know Senator Pavley asked for that study, but I'm not sure that it's done. Are you familiar with that, Senator? I believe that's the case.
Yes, Senator.
Too late. No, we're good.
We're good, yeah.
Well, that was extensively discussed in the proposition negotiations. The whole point is, really, the consensus was that kind of dredging is very, very expensive. And to get the greater yield, we needed to go another direction. So that was not a priority. And I don't think it should be a priority. I think I'd rather see the resources directed other than dredging existing reservoirs.
So with the current funding, that's...
No.
Okay, no. No is the answer.
Can I have one more time?
Well, you can, but I don't know if they can do anything else.
I'm a farmer, and I know a lot of people are these farmers, and I donate an excavator just to get this project done. We need this water now, fellas. We need to work together.
That's not to say that the local water agencies, if there's a situation like that they can't come put a plan together, but it doesn't fit the criteria for what we're doing. Might for some of the other money in the bond.
So something should be done. It sounds like you all have the will in the way. They can't fund it. Okay, we're going this way, sir.
This is a comment. Ernie Washington. There's a lot of people up here that are highly dependent upon the aquifer, and when we see the level of interest in groundwater storage, we hope that you'll consider any projects affecting our aquifer in terms of its effects on the quality and our rights to use that water.
Thank you. Okay. I know that there's a lot of you back here who are anxious. As your colleagues will go fast, you'll get there faster, but we want to make sure everybody can participate. Go ahead.
Thanks, everybody. Robert Eberhardt. I'm married into an Ammon farming family here in Chico. I think what we need to do is we do need sites. My only concern about sites is reducing the amount of water coming down the river, which does recharge the Tuscan aquifer, because we're landlocked. Our orchards are only on well water. So that's my only concern. But sites definitely needs to be built. Two quick comments. We need to shift the whole state's reliance away from Northern California water. We need to shift the reliance. What they need to do is they need to, and don't tax anymore. We already got money earmarked for a train, $80 billion. That $80 billion, they just built a desalination plant in San Diego. It's $1 billion for a desalination plant. With that money earmarked for a train to nowhere, that'll never get built. They could take that $80 billion and build 80 desalination plants along the coast to supply all the coastal communities with water, guaranteed water. Take that tunnel project, that grand number, $80 billion. $80 billion, you could build 10 XL pipelines from the Midwest, pipe all that water to Central California. We keep our water. Central California is taken care of. The coastal communities are taken care of. And it doesn't cost us any more money, because that money's already earmarked. We just have to shift it to what's really needed. Not a train that's gonna 0.1% is gonna ride that train. You build 80 desalination plants, you're gonna put tens of thousands of jobs out there and supply tens of millions of people with water, guaranteed water. So let's shift this. We do need storage, we need big storage, we need small storage, we gotta look outside the box, but we need to reduce the state's reliance on Northern California water.
Thank you. Okay, so just checking, you don't have any control over any of that.
Appreciate your sentiments.
Okay. Thanks, but they can't fix it, but nope.
Okay, I'm Dan Bailey. Been born and raised here in Chico and live now in Red Bluff. And I notice here, for those folks that think they have water rights, that this plan now says that you have water entitlements. Has anyone noticed that on page 3? Of the document that they presented, the AB 1471, take a look at page 3, and
so
down at the bottom of the page, AB, for the definition. Water rights means legal entitlement authorizing water to be diverted from a specified source and put to a beneficial, non-wasteful use.
So you're worried that entitlement is different than rights?
What does that mean to these people that have rights?
Great, thank you. So a legal answer over there, do you know, or is that?
I believe what's being referred to is a definition in the statute, and that's something that we cannot change. That was just the law and the definition of what they put for a water right.
So it's a definition, it's not something they cooked up with, and
It's the existing definition. It's not a change.
It's not a change.
It may sound a little scary, but it's all scary, but it's not a change.
Senator, let's get on
that. That is not a change, but in addition to that, the same area of origin language that is contained in the 2009 statute, which was a new statutory water plan. And by the way, that plan changed water in California substantially in this respect. I have to touch upon it. Co-equal goals. Co-equal goals, my negotiation on that was co-equal goals was going to mean that humans had a water right again. So it had been all fish, and now co-equal was going to make that statement. Now, to your point, the area of origin language is in there. It's the first time we've ever had area of origin language. It refers to a section in the water code that ensures in those counties, the areas of the origin, those with those rights have that protected. Now, there are erosions in our rights that have come with some legislation in the last drought legislation. That's another matter from here. But in terms of the bond, the area of origin language is in there to protect it, and entitlement means the same thing.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good evening. I'm from Oroville, and one of the problems that we have in Oroville, obviously, that Oroville Dam is there, is the issue of recreation. I'd like you to take, or this question to you is, what are going to be your benchmarks for what recreation occurs to the project? And part of our problem in Oroville is the state of California owns the facility. We have to go to Sacramento to ensure that our recreation promises that were done when the dam was done, which were all handshake agreements, and then at the end of the FERC license, 50 years later, we're still in 10 to 15 years of negotiations for those recreation improvements that were promised under the handshake. So my question to the commission is, how are you going to ensure those benchmarks are met, the recreation plan is followed, and are we going to have to rely on FERC, or Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to actually enforce those recreation requirements?
Thank you, sir. Recreation.
You get a lot of tough questions here for a non-lawyer. To the degree that the State Water Commission funds recreation, first of all, it wouldn't hold your breath for a lot on that one, but it's definitely possible as sort of an add-on to help a project along, as long as it meets all those other goals. I'm assuming these are operational contracts that we will be insisting upon, because we, on behalf of the public, are essentially paying for those public benefits. And we're not really interested in having a project tell us, by the way, we've got this public benefit and that public benefit and this public benefit, and just take our word for that, okay? Well, the deal will be, the contract says that the water will be reserved for those public benefits. And then whatever happens when there's a breach of a contract, God only knows, I certainly don't, but that would be the system, I assume.
Thanks. Yes, sir. Again, we're trying to go quickly so we can keep moving. Thank you.
Well, you've got the wrong, well, no. Kevin Zeitler, I am the chair of the ORAC, the Oroville Recreation Advisory Committee. So we could answer that. You would have to have a hydroelectric plant to be under FERC. So that's, you know, if the state water contractor, this project doesn't have that, we don't have to worry about that. However, though, one of the concerns that we have, and the question to the commission is, and the committee is, if we have water in Lake Oroville, which is used for recreation for us, we do have a Northern California site to be named later at that point, which is where the water probably is going to come from, because most of the water comes from California. Is that, if they release water underneath this 50-50 plan, and we don't have to release water and can keep our recreation, is that a recreation benefit underneath this project?
Thank you. Gosh, that's a pretty detailed
it's
a, question.
It's another good question.
Are you guys that far? Do you
don't
know that yet?
Don't hold your breath. We're,
Jenny.
We're really working on trying to get guidelines for a lot of questions. That would definitely be one of them. So if you got any ideas, which I assume you do, and really, frankly, this is important to hear the incredible diversity of issues and concerns that are associated with what exactly we're talking about, I have no answer for you on that. But that is something that can be discussed and worked out, I assume. But no, I have no answer for you.
Okay. I'm moving to the next. Well, I'll go that way. I'm going to finish this row. So you, sir, were in next. Thank you.
Clay Maynard, Yuba City. Most of us, or many of us, had voted on this thinking that we are voting for water storage. And I realize now that of the $5.4 billion, $2.7 billion be under your purview, and I guess we don't really know what will be happening with the other $2.7 billion, as you were alluding to earlier. My question is, since many of our taxes right now, especially gas taxes, are being siphoned off into the high-speed rail project that this other gentleman was talking about earlier, Can this commission assure us that none of the $5.4 billion will go to the high-speed rail project in any way, shape, or form, or any of the environmental mitigation of the project? That's my question.
Yes. I can guarantee you absolutely that that will not happen. What they're doing with the other money and how they're getting it, all bets are off. That's up to you guys to figure out. The money that we have is $2.7 billion. By statute, it has to be at least another matched by $2.7 billion, so that we will hopefully at least, at a minimum, we have to develop $5.4 billion worth of storage infrastructure. If we do our job right and, in a way, force all these projects to think through their projects more, I am really hoping that that 2.7 doesn't just get matched, it can get doubled and tripled when you add federal money, local money, different kinds of agencies. I don't care if it's CARB, if it's the PUC, any money you want to name that has an initial, that has some money, that has an interest in clean water, clean air, biomass jobs, they can all fit into this process so that it doesn't have to be $5.4 billion. If it could be $8.6 billion in infrastructure, we're talking. And that's what we're going to try to do. But no, none of this money will go to the high-speed rail train. Absolutely. You want to go look at CARB and talk about that money, that's a different problem, a different place.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Mike Cole, Sutter County farmer. Say, I hope I didn't misunderstand this, but it sounds like the state, Fish, Wildlife, and DWR has not made the determination of what is going to be considered measurable benefit in the Delta. They must be, it must be have to do with increased CFS, less incidental take by the pelagics, less salt intrusion. But where are they at? Before anybody can even come up with a proposal for a project, wouldn't that have to be the basis?
And that's one of the things that we're talking about as soon as possible. So our agency team meets twice a month, and our next two meetings we'll be talking about these measurable improvements. And that'll be part, once we get some movement on a proposal for what measurable improvements are, that'll be presented to the commission during a public, during one of their public meetings and have a chance for comment.
This is a really important question for the stakeholder meetings that we're holding, the people who will be bringing us projects, who have diverse points of view, the people who will be critiquing those projects, the people who are going to build, let's assume for a moment, the sites project, the joint powers that are doing that, they will also have a clear understanding, or at least some understanding, of how their project's going to affect the Delta in a measurable way. We haven't made those guidelines up. We're looking for that kind of input to help us make that decision. What does measurable guidelines amount to? And does it have to be so measurable? All of that's unclear, but the people who are bringing us projects understand that there has to be a measurable improvement in the health of the Delta. These are smart people who understand how to measure some of these things. They can say, here's our project, here's what it does, we've studied it. It's certainly not going to be dismissed out of hand because, well, we haven't gotten through our guidelines yet. When we give you our guidelines, then you do it the way we tell you. No, we're looking for help to precisely what that means. And I think there's a lot of people out there who will be able to help us. And you mentioned three things which I couldn't repeat. They all sounded pretty good to me. You know, salinity, pelagic, whatever it was, and a couple other things.
Well, the
is
smelt,
it measurable?
The smelts
is it the Delta?
Are considered pelagics. But,
okay. But is it a measurable improvement? It's in the Delta. They make the case.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Yes, the well, it would seem to me that anything measure, anything that we can manage, is a positive for the whole system. We have rain events and the bypasses run, and we have no way of keeping that water. Anything that we can put behind a dam, it has a positive impact, and we can use it both for farming and for the environment, hopefully recharging the groundwater. And the other thing I just wanted to ask the commission here, will the site's reservoir or any of the reservoirs that we could possibly come up with, would that count in any way for mitigation towards this proposal that for flood control? Because flood control, a flood's the next thing coming. We got a drought right now. A flood's coming. I don't know when, but it's coming. Okay. Will that count as any kind of a mitigation towards the flood control project that the state's kind of coming up with, the enlarging the bypass and taking away, I don't know, 40, 50,000 acres of farmland down through Sutter County?
Okay, so again, a question about how
flood control is one of the criteria that can be supported by the commission. So yes, that doesn't actually do, it doesn't have to do with what you were just talking about, but if the project helps with flood control, that's something that should be considered by the commission in terms of our ability to fund a public benefit.
Okay, so that flood control is one of the public benefits. Yes, sir.
Yes, my name's Paul Bear. I chair the Rock Creek Reclamation District, now north of Chico, and most all my district members are almond and walnut farmers. And we're totally dependent on groundwater. And Governor Brown passed the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act and declared the basins and the sub-basins. And Butte County is now forced with having to maintain that basin. And this is a non-funded mandate. And the counties now have a hard time staying alive. Money isn't just all over in the coffers. And our aquifer, you know, is non-sustainable. It's been subsiding for 50 years. We know the aquifer has dropped from 50 to 85 feet. I've been here 75 years. My parents were here 75 before that. And my dad damn near drowned in a well in Chapmantown digging it. Just a hand-dug well. The water was so plentiful, it came so hard. And now our wells are down. We're going dry. So I hope in all this planning, we're sitting on top of the greatest storage area in California, the aquifer. We need to fill that back up. And the future's dire because there's thousands of new acres of walnuts and almonds coming into play as we speak. The prices are good.
Thank
we
you,
need
sir.
To really consider the aquifers.
Thank you, sir.
So I do want to make a comment. I
yes,
think,
please.
Thank you so much for that. What I really want is everybody here to listen to everybody else, because that's a very important statement that gentleman just made, as are the people who've been talking about the site's reservoir as critical to the future of this region. Somehow they got to work together. The more they can work together, the more they're going to fit within our instructions, so to speak, on how to fund and what to fund. So they're not distinct and separate. They've got to be seen as part and parcel of one large project, so to speak.
Thanks. Yes, sir.
Craig Poundstone. I like to talk about Sites Reservoir. I'm a landowner in District 108 out of Grimes. A couple of weeks ago, we had a meeting on Sites. We are going to vote on it if we want to participate.
Sir, you have to turn this way.
Participate. In the next 2 years, December of 16, we found out that our cost is going to be $250 per acre assessed to the landowner for 10 or more years. The rest of the funds would come out of the district on transferring to the Central Valley, the water sales, the transfer. So we're not going to see construction for at least 10 years on that project. And I can tell you most of the landowners in 108 is not going to vote for the $250 assessment. So they better figure out where you're going to get the money. And the environmental impact's 3 or 4 years alone.
Okay.
So who knows?
Okay. So a response about the timing? No. So, okay. So I'm going to go. You guys are good?
Gary Merlo, a third-generation almond farmer. I have a comment and a question. This weekend, Jerry Brown was on the Washington shows, and he was asked specifically about almond farming, and the fact keeps coming up of 1 gallon per nut. And then right here, this is about 500 nuts, 600. You know, this is 600 gallons of water, according to not the best science. So I just want to make sure that you guys go through the science on that factoid specifically. My question is, Jerry Brown also gave $20 million approximately to to pass this proposition between his campaign and his political action committees. And I know that 7 of the new committee members have just been appointed. What was Jerry Brown's comments on this? What are his opinions, if you can share those?
Okay.
We just had a couple of new appointments, not 7. And to be quite honest, I've never been spoken to by Jerry Brown about this. And everything you read in the paper is what we hear. And it's not inappropriate. He appointed Armando Quintero because this guy knows some stuff. I don't know why he appointed me, but, you know, I'll go with the program. We don't get instructions on this. And there's a lot of anxious people who have points of view that go from one side in the administration to the other side. And I have yet to receive a phone call saying, boy, you better do it this way or that way. And I got to tell you, that will never happen. That phone call will not happen. So, I mean, I'm happy to see that. I've been wondering how big, you know, a bag of almonds looks and how much the water is. But you're under the gun for water, of course. You got to survive. But there's also a PR battle here. And, you know, people want to eat. It's going to take water. So there's a real argument to be made in defense of the water it takes to provide the food you're eating, for crying out loud. But you think the walnut was like the masked bandit here in California. You want to have a 10-ounce steak, you better talk about a lot of water. But you know what? That's the way it is. You don't get food without water. So you got to fight back on this one. And, you know, I'm going to turn this one over.
Yeah, thanks for your comment. Actually, one of our commissioners, Joe Del Bosque, is a rancher, a farmer, and he grows almonds as well as cantaloupes and a bunch of other
cherries.
And he's down in near Los Banos. And, you know, you bring up an important point, because in a lot of articles that we're seeing, people talk about a gallon, how many gallons for different types of food. And there's a real problem with that, because actually I work at UC Merced with scientists, and there is real inaccuracies in what's called a water footprint. And I think one of the things that we need to do in everything that we're talking about is come up with a language that is understandable to everybody, because you can see different articles and different charts, and they're going to make different comparisons that don't make sense to an article you just saw the day before. And so one of the things actually at the university we want to do is come up with something that's called a standard footprinting, so that you can look at something and it's per ounce or something like that, because it's really, it really confuses the conversation, because we need food. I mean, it would be great for people... for folks who are not farmers to look at their plate and understand what that takes. And part of that for me is in that understanding is that we need to value that. And right now I don't think that many people in California, and actually many people, understand the value of what's in front of them and what's sustaining them. And so we hope, I think, as a commission, to be making a very clear case about the value of these projects, the value to California, and the value to the people out in the population of California that benefit from these projects.
Okay.
I would wish every person in California who's not in the ag industry, when they sat down to look at dinner, would say to themselves, oh, that looks damn good, but there goes my morning shower. Now, which is it? Am I going to eat dinner or am I going to take a shower? They have no clue. And I mean, I'm as ignorant as the next person. They want the water to come out of the tap, but now everybody is being drawn into this crisis because we're talking 25 and 35% cuts. There's going to be a debate in this state like none you've seen in a long, long time, and we're going to have to start figuring out what our values are. But we still can use water more efficiently. We can still store water in ways that we haven't thought about, and that's what we're trying to do here, because we're not going to solve that conversation as frustrating as it is. Tonight, anyway.
Okay, so let me just do a little time check. It's 8 o'clock. You're still in the queue. We're not going anywhere. The commissioners, you're still okay?
I'm still standing.
You're still standing? Okay. So we have 4 more rows, maybe 5 more rows, and we're kind of moving pretty well. So let me just get to this gentleman who's next in the queue.
Yeah, my name's Matt Westervelt. I'm from Oroville. I was there through the whole dam project as a child. I'm a core driller. If you don't know what that is, that's an exploration driller, and I've drilled on most of the newer dam sites in California, and I couldn't see that list, but I don't know if the Newville site's on there or not, but it is a larger project than the sites project. It would store 2/3 of what Oroville stores, and it's on Thomas Creek, out by Pascana, and I realize that creek's pretty dry most of the year, but when it does flood, it's got the potential to fill that whole dam. You can tell by the way it washes down to the Sacramento River, and I don't see that coming out of over at sites, so I don't know. They've drilled a lot of dam sites where the water actually had to be pumped there. They can't sustain itself. San Luis Reservoir is one of them, and then but that's a federal one. But the state drilled one 5 miles south of there on Los Banos Creek, and it's really got no way to fill itself. They'd have to bring water from elsewhere.
Okay, so just because it's not on that list doesn't mean that it can't be funded. Is that correct? As long as it fills.
That's correct. Local and regional projects can be also storage projects, but I don't think that's really the point I want to make here. Thank you for bringing that up. That's not something any of us have heard, and maybe it's something that the region needs to take a look at. I have no idea. Maybe they've looked at it and said it's not feasible, but thank you very much, and it's exactly the kind of information that we need people to start thinking about and integrating into their thinking.
The DWR, State of California, drilled out there for 3 years, but it was the Red Bluff office that did the exploratory drilling, and Sacramento didn't like that. They said they have no business doing it, but somewhere they came up with the money to do it.
Okay.
Are you talking about bureaucratic infighting? Oh, come on there. That doesn't happen.
Yes, sir.
Bob Nash, Redding, California. I just have a statement. First of all, a very quick story. My great-grandfather came here in 1877 and wrote extensively about his travels and mentioned when he was in San Francisco that he was advised not to go to Yosemite Park because they were in the third year of a drought and the waterfalls were dried up. So he didn't go. Okay. The statement I want to make is I would like to encourage you as a commission, when you're analyzing these projects and looking at them and how you're going to allocate the funds, that you choose projects or a combination of projects or a project that you can invest in that project and see that project to completion financially. That you don't go out and salt and pepper a bunch of projects and leave a whole bunch of stuff undone and nothing completed. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Jennifer's analysis was exactly along those lines. Is it financially feasible? Is it economically feasible? We're going to look at it all.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, sir.
Hi, Doug Teeter, Butte County Supervisor. I just want to point out our ag crop report. The last we got was almost $800 million, and Glynn County was almost $700 million, and we really need to fix our surface water. So I'm kind of behind sites right now. You know, obviously, as you gather information, we'll watch it closely, but I really want to strongly support sites.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I'm going along this way. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Maureen Kirk. I'm a Butte County Supervisor, and actually everybody's talked about sites enough, so I want to actually address the conjunctive use and the groundwater storage projects. Groundwater storage projects in the northern Sacramento Valley would presumably utilize groundwater substitution water transfers to supplement water supply demand throughout the state. Butte County supervisors have expressed concerns that regional groundwater substitution transfer programs pose significant threats to the economy, quality of life, and the environment of the county. Groundwater substitution transfers that occur, for example, in Calusa or Glenn counties have the potential over the long term to draw down groundwater sources shared with Butte County. A net reduction in groundwater levels would result in an adverse environmental effects or effects to non-transferring parties. So my concern is our aquifer, and at the moment we have domestic wells that are going down and down and down. So we don't have an excess of water in our aquifer as people are presumably thinking. So I want to really make sure that when you consider groundwater storage and conjunctive use, you realize that it has big impacts up here too. So thank you.
Okay, we're almost there. Yes, I've got you. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Dwight Foltz, Board of Supervisors, Glenn County. My real job is I do water wells, servicing on domestics, and some small ag. I was a licensed well drawer. So I have a little bit of a clue about groundwater and irrigation. Been family farming for, families had the farm over 100 years. What I want to talk about is 100 years ago or around or so, they put, the Water and Water Users got together, got funding, put in two dams on Stony Creek. Last year, we were down to, we virtually ran out of water, but just barely made it through the harvest season. We've had three major rain events. We've got enough water to make it through this year with no problem and enough to start partial for next year. That's the difference between having a dam and not. We have two small dams that provide recreation. They provide constant water flow down dry areas that provides water for livestock and wildlife. There's fishing. Secondary ends up going down Stony Creek till it ends up dumping into the Sacramento River. Along that, when that creek ran dry last year in June, I believe, the water tables in the surface, in the groundwater wells, dropped considerably. All right? The creek starts running. Everything came back up to where it was in January of last year. By fault and not even planning, the dams provide the water storage, they provide environmental health, recreation, fishing, groundwater supplies. This is why Sykes is really important. If it's done, and it's got a good plan, but if it's done right, it meets all your criteria. It takes care of flood control. And when you talk about flood control, if we pump the water out for flood control, now who owns the water? The person that pumped it? Should be. But is that going to be what the state's going to let us do?
Thank you. Okay, so you moved. You were in the row, but then you moved. Come up. All right, I'll come back to you. So, in this row here. No, not in this row. Okay. We're going to go. Now I have to reach over people. That's a drag. You're in the queue. Okay. Thanks for being patient and waiting, all. This is really helpful.
I want to thank the water commissioners, too, for coming here, because I think there's a problem in Sacramento where we think of a central valley, that is one whole valley which reaches from Red Bluff to Bakersfield. It's not one whole valley. This is the Northern California Sacramento Valley, and we have different needs, different opportunities. Our groundwater is a serious case in point. We have problems, it's gone down, but it's not depleted. So we can't look at the kind of groundwater storage plans and conjunctive use plans that operate in the southern part of the state. We need to protect our groundwater. You've come to Chico, you've seen the beautiful trees. Those trees are fed by groundwater. They're not watered. So please, in your considerations of so-called storage projects, we want to make sure that these storage projects do not have the end result of emptying our aquifer before they fill it up again. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, so I can get to the last couple people in the row here, I'm going to have to go behind you. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Barbara. I'm with Aqua Alliance. I just want to suggest to you, many people have talked about the concerns about how you're going to evaluate these projects. I'd like to remind you that we had the last two governors have promoted the twin tunnels and presented them as environmentally friendly. Most people up here realize they're going to help drain this region. And it was outside science from the National Science Academy that pointed out how detrimental these tunnels will be to the stated goals of the past two governors. All storage proponents are going to say that their project is environmentally friendly. We've seen it before, we'll see it again. And have great potential to damage the groundwater here and groundwater users. Ideas all look good in concept, but when you get into the weeds, that's when you get into the problems. My concern is you have expressed the openness to feedback, and I appreciate that. But the thing that I think is missing here is project proponents are going to bring forward science from consultants that support their goals. It's not going to be objective. And you really need economic, hydrologic, and environmental science that is objective, that will help you evaluate these things, because we all know that you're not going to have a process that helps us point it out, except when it gets to the environmental review stage. So I really think it's something that you need to consider in your process.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm moving this way. Okay, yes, ma'am.
Yes, please. I'm concerned that rain can't be counted on to fill our current or proposed reservoirs. So I believe that focus on ecosystem benefits are absolutely crucial, and I'm glad to hear about them. And I'd like to address many citizens' concerns here about groundwater contamination, noting that this bond funding includes groundwater contamination prevention. Many of our North State citizens are very concerned about actual and potential groundwater contamination, including sources such as dangerous train routes, dumping wastewater near aquifers, saline intrusion, and oil and gas mining operations where there is insufficient transparency right now. And I know you said that transparency is absolutely needed. So the funding must include related water testing and protections to keep our groundwater safe. Do you think that you would be able to do that? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so what authorities does the Water Commission have under Chapter 8 for contamination of groundwater?
I believe part of the criteria is groundwater cleanup, but the rest of it is within the State Water Resources Control Board, the DWR.
So part of our eligible projects are groundwater storage projects and groundwater contamination prevention or remediation projects. So those are eligible projects, and part of the quote-unquote guarantee for getting those benefits is project proponents must get into contract with the Department of Water Resources, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the State Board to ensure that those public benefits are achieved and maintained throughout the project life. So if there is a groundwater quality benefit, the project owner and operator will have to ensure that those benefits are maintained in perpetuity.
Thank you, Jenny. So going this way, ma'am.
Thank you. Anjanette Shadley with Western Canal Water District on the Feather River, who are also receiving a 50% curtailment this year. And we fully support the storage investment going to above surface water projects and specifically Sites Reservoir. I think what people need to realize is that a healthy surface water storage system will protect your groundwater, because then you will not have to pump it when the surface water supplies are cut. So we'd like to make sure that is taken into consideration as well.
No, okay, thank you. Yes, sir.
Bryce Lundberg. I chair the Northern California Water Association Board. I'm also an appointee to the State Food and Ag Board. And I think this is a great, a significant time, a great opportunity. $2.7 billion have been voted for storage by the state of California. You know, I'm not sure I ever would see this in my lifetime, and what a great time it is. I would ask that the commission use these funds wisely, and I would ask that you set a high bar, a very high bar. Please don't make easy money. I would ask that you evaluate the magnitude of the projects, and that you be straightforward in your approach to funding the projects. You know, I think there's been a lot of discussion about other projects or other ideas that I think aren't prop or aren't storage funds, but are Prop 1 funds. There's what, $1.5 billion for a watershed restoration. There's almost $1 billion for groundwater sustainability. There's $800 million for regional water reliability. But you guys are working on storage, and I would like to ask that you set a high bar. Now, there's a lot of people who say, well, you got to be creative in approach to this $2.7 billion. And I would ask, please don't be too creative. You know, some people will say, well, let me show you how there's public benefit and try to connect the dots five or six different ways toward that public benefit. I would ask that you work with projects that have all five public benefits. There's going to be plenty of them. And the idea that you can pick them that have one public benefit, I would just ask that you look at that, have all five public benefits.
Thank you, sir.
And I'd ask that you look at large multi-purpose projects that have those. And then the question I would have, though, has to do with how do the public benefits that you're going to be funding relate to the non-public benefits of the project, and how would you prioritize those? Because you're looking at the public benefits for $2.7 billion. There's going to have to be billions and billions of other funds coming in to connect with your public funds. How will you evaluate those projects based upon those other parts of those projects?
I'm glad you asked, because we really have focused on the public benefits portion of it, but I can tell you that the conversations that we've been having have to do with the projects that will bring the greatest reliability and flexibility to the statewide water process as a whole, trying to find ways to connect the CVU, the Central Valley, and the state projects. Just in general, what will be the best for the statewide water system is an important part of our consideration beyond the public benefit question. What will provide the most multi-benefit for the projects? And just as importantly, and particularly up here, you need to pay attention to this, what will leverage the most other dollars? So that you're not just saying, well, we're going to use the public benefit portion of this. And I'm not saying this is an easy conversation, but the more you can find in the community for different purposes that really bring water, more water to people, then you'll have more leverage, more dollars coming in. Every dollar that can be explored needs to be explored, so that the $2.7 billion that we've been authorized to spend doesn't result in simply $5.4 billion worth of infrastructure, but hopefully $8 to $10 billion worth of infrastructure, because we go to projects that have leveraged more money from other sources. It's a very, you said, don't be easy. This is going to be the toughest portion of this whole project, whole thing. You know, we got a little money here. If you expect that much money over here, yeah, I don't know, because we got a bunch of good projects. But if you can get away with this here and find other sources, well, that will make the projects you're looking at perhaps more efficient. And I don't want to use that word. That's not exactly the word I'm looking for. More value to the dollar. That is the very critical question. And everybody up here should be fully appreciative of that. Nobody wants to see that tax dollar go any less than we can possibly make it go.
Thank you. So I have two more people in the queue, and then it looks like three? Okay, three more people in the queue.
Hi, I'm Ann D. Felice. I have two comments. First one is, as a private citizen, I live in a foothill community that a year ago, February, my well went dry, and many others in the community are experiencing the same. We are having our water trucked in from Willows. We have potential fire danger with my tank that I am now using for home use. Previously was there for fire protection. If we can store water strategically around the community and prevent catastrophic fire because we can get water quicker, would that count towards preventing damage to the delta by having erosion problems from catastrophic fire? That's one question.
That's the first question. So is that kind of project eligible?
You know, it's a very complicated question, but as part of a series of measures that the Water Commission might be asked to contribute to, which have to do with water quality. I mean, if there's a catastrophic forest fire, you can count on water quality going down dramatically. Mm-hmm. You can count on less absorption into the ground.
Right.
Can we finance your project? No. Can we give you a few bucks if it really makes a lot of sense and there's a lot of community support and different sources of money saying this is absolutely essential for our area because it's going to have a detrimental effect? You got a sympathetic group here. We'll take a hard look, but there's $2.7 billion.
Right.
Some people don't want us to spend on anything but these large projects. Some people want it's interesting. You raise one of those issues that we will never hear if we don't come here.
Right. That's why I wanted to bring it up.
Thank you for raising it. I would fight for it if I were you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
And then my other question, I am a wastewater treatment plant operator for the city of Chico. And our effluent goes to the Sacramento River. Can we put together a project? I mean, I'm speaking just as myself, not as a city official. I'm just curious. Can that water be put into a project to recycle? I mean, is that a feasible thing?
So there has to be some sort of storage element to your project. So if the effluent was used to recharge a groundwater basin to improve storage conditions, you have to make sure that you tie your project to some storage element.
Yes, sir.
My name is Neil Risley, and I have a question in regards to ethics. Is there ethical verbiage written into this to where inside trading can't go on within the political community? And the reason why I say that is if you look at what happened to the Denver airport, when that got passed, that real estate was owned by people in political positions, and they overinflated the prices of the real estate that the society purchased for that project. And something else that comes to mind that was recently in the paper is Nestle's, the corporation Nestle's, was pumping water out of the national forest, and their permit expired in 1988. And how can we not have checks and balances in place and let something like that go on for so long?
Thank you.
And then lastly, you know, political people have short memories when it comes to their follies. And Arnold Schwarzenegger in 2010 lowered a lot of lake levels because they had a fear of an earthquake. Well, that earthquake never came, and it put us in a real hard place now. And what can we do in the future to stop that from happening?
All the questions you asked are great questions. They're really not in the overview of the commission, except for the ethical question. There are very strict ethical rules. That's probably why there's only two and couldn't have been more than three here, because we're really not allowed to talk to each other on issues before the commission. We're violating some law, I'm not sure what it is, if we do. We can come and get information like this, which is good. I saw the Nestle's issue was in Southern California. I haven't a clue how they got away with that since 1988. I don't think that's going to solve our water problem, but it certainly should be looked at. And I forgot the last one.
So I'm going to turn to one more person and then ask the elected officials and the commissioners to wrap us up for this evening. And thank you for staying.
Thank you, Juliana. My name is Ryan Shore, and I'm a sixth-generation farmer here in Northern California. My family's been here since 1861, and I serve on the Water Commission in Butte County. And my comments tonight, I'll try to be brief, but I want to make sure that folks are recognized for coming and staying, and thank you for coming tonight to this long meeting. But first and foremost, California used to be a beacon of opportunity and a beacon of hope for farmers, for immigrants from all over the world to come here to build a better life for their family. Saturday, my neighbor left for another state, packed up the U-Haul, put the car in the trailer, loaded up and left. And I think that's indicative of what's happening. And I think part of the problem is because of the bureaucracy. You mentioned that this process for co-equal goals, of which California has a multitude of co-equal goals, and oftentimes we struggle with that. How do we balance the budget? How do we have low unemployment? So you can see the skepticism in the room based on those co-equal goals. But we've heard this project, this review, the project being the review period, an allocation could take 5 years on top of 2 years. That's 7 years. A project like Sites Reservoir, with a net design capacity of about 1.8 million acre feet of annual production, of new water essentially, it's 1.8 million acre feet of new water in this state, over that 7 year period is 12.6 million acre feet. That's 12.6 million acre feet of lost opportunity. That's enough for 12.6 million homes. That's enough to irrigate millions of acres of farmland and provide millions of jobs. Beneficial to our economy and to the future. Earlier tonight, we had some young FFA members here worried about their future and agriculture in this state, and I commend them for coming tonight. So with that being said, I would implore you to consider the economic consequences of your duty, of your job for the next 7 years, if you will. What are the economic consequences of those co-equal goals? Will they create jobs? Will they leverage other dollars? Because if we have strong, healthy, vibrant agricultural economies at the farm gate, at the retail level, we also have strong school systems. We have strong road systems and county budgets, and those coffers do a lot better when we're stronger economically. Our farm is being cut 60% this year on some of our allocations in the water district with which we farm. Needless to say, it's tragic. When I get a phone call, I have to turn down job opportunities to folks who have worked for us for years past because of the decisions of bureaucrats oftentimes. So I implore you to look at the economic consequences and that nexus that exists. And the second thing that I'd ask you to do is obviously support Sites Reservoir. It's a great project. As you mentioned, it has many benefits. That being said, I think one of the most important ones is sometimes lost because we have a defined structure. And that's the benefit to groundwater. If we provide 1.8 million acre feet annually on one side of the balance sheet, that might be meaning that we have a 1.8 million reduction in groundwater usage. So that would help sustain our aquifers and put people to work. And it's those kinds of things that I think are important for the commission to look at as they go forward. It's not just one column of co-equal goals, but how do those goals affect one another? And I implore you to look at that side of the balance sheet as well. So again, to recap, economic consequences of generating millions of acre feet of new water annually on this state. We know what that would do. Those numbers are available, and I implore you to consider them. And number two, look at the net impact to things like groundwater so that we can have sustainable and safe yield from our underground aquifers. And with that, thank you very much for coming to Northern California. I appreciate your time tonight. Thank you.
Thank all of you. No kidding. This has really been helpful for me and my fellow commissioner. Thank you so much. I want to also thank Assemblyman Gallagher very much and Senator Nielsen for hanging in here. I can tell you, you're in very good hands here. If you want to come up and say a few words, please do, although the chairs are starting to get right lined up here. So.
I know everybody wants to get out of here, and again, I want to just thank everybody for coming tonight. There was a lot of great input that I think we got here tonight, and these commissioners got tonight. One couple things I just want to bring home for you. One, I know there's a lot of gobbledygook in these presentations sometimes, and believe me, welcome to my world. I got to do this every day. But the bottom line from that presentation is that the projects that we care about, like Sites Reservoir, like Temperance Flat, they qualify. They meet those public benefits, okay? So there's no worry about those projects not being eligible for funding. They will be eligible for funding. But the other part is how important it is that these projects get built. And I think I heard I heard two big things tonight, and I hope that our commissioners take these to heart too. One is how much people up here believe that above ground storage has to happen, that has to be part of our future if we want to invest and secure our water future in this state. The other thing we heard a lot about is groundwater. And I think what you heard a lot is that there are people up here are not real thrilled about a groundwater storage project in these basins because of the impact that it might have on our groundwater basins and keeping them sustainable long term. But I think what we also know, and it was a great point made tonight, is that the best thing that we can do to help secure and make sure that our groundwater basins are sustainable for the future is to build above ground water storage. Because when we have that storage and we have that water available, that surface water gets put over fields. It helps recharge our aquifers by farmers. That water that's being put out in those rice fields, that's getting put out on all of our crops throughout the North State, that water is going back down and recharging our aquifers. And when we use surface water, we're using less groundwater, and we're not depleting that groundwater aquifer as much. And when you see these drops in groundwater levels, a lot of it is because surface water allocations have been cut because there's not enough water in this state. And we're getting cut. We're not able to use that surface water. People have to pump more. That's why you're seeing your groundwater go down. So the way to deal with that problem, one of the best ways to deal with that problem, is make sure that we build more water and we're capturing more water. One final point, you heard a lot about small projects. And look, the small projects that make sense, and that number one, they have to be a water storage project. So something that increases flows and does those things but doesn't store water, that's not something that should be coming under this $2.7 billion, all right? It needs to be a water storage project. And something that improves flows, unless there's a storage project to capture the water that flows, that doesn't really do anything to help our long-term water security and our water future. So we need to be very vigilant at watching these small projects, because small projects can suck up a lot of that money and mean that these projects like sites don't get built. We need to be very vigilant at watching that and making sure that this goes to water storage projects. So if this is just the first part, we need to remain engaged in the process. And I think on all three of those points, building water storage, protecting our groundwater basins, and ensuring that money doesn't get sucked up and not be available to vital water storage projects are something that we need to remain engaged on throughout the process. Thank you for being here tonight.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I very personally and from my heart like to thank Commissioners Curtin and Quintero who have come up here tonight. Been a long pull for them, and God love you, men. Thank you for coming up here. They're listening to us, and they're outlining what our challenge is. Late that September night a year ago, when several of us were invited down to the governor's office for him to sign what became Proposition 1, I observed to my colleagues that were working with me on this project, our work has just begun. It's not over with. And I didn't mean to pass the bond. It's all what's even going on this very night. By them coming up here and listening to you and offering to you yet to come again to listen more and giving you other options to communicate, they're opening their door to your feelings, your ideas, your passions, and your concerns. That's not always happened in the past, and I want to thank them for that commitment to us. But the greater challenge is for all of us to demonstrate to them that what we're talking about here tonight makes the most sense for their prioritization, that makes the most sense for their criteria. I believe that their criteria allows us to present our case, and that our case is a good one. I believe that Sites Reservoir meets most all of those conditions, including groundwater, and we can present that case. So from now on, it is our challenge to present our case, and I suggest whom you work with would be the members of the Sites Joint Powers Authority, and you have representatives on that Joint Powers Authority. Some of them have been here tonight. Your county supervisors, work with them, and work within all of the other organizations that you are a part of, and get those messages communicated. Gallagher and I will help you access those means and those ways. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for your showing of interest here tonight. It exceeded my greatest expectations, and I can assure you, your voices have been heard. And let's get out and continue our work.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you so much. You did a great job, buddy.
You did our best.